Welcome into the Cam and Strick podcast, episode number 77.
77's a lot, dude.
Well, you said that last time when it was 76. Is that the way you want to start off every podcast?
Yeah.
Like, ooh, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
It's a lot, dude.
It is a lot.
In a year, that's a lot, man. 77? A lot of guys I was uncomfortable with. Lou.
Keenan.
Mike Keenan. Fuck, Mike McDonald, because I didn't sleep for 4 days. my wife left me for...
she didn't really leave you.
No,
don't
she
didn't
leave. No. She wasn't happy. She wasn't happy. I was fucked up in that interview. It was a weird one. But there... That 77's a lot, Andy. We're doing pretty good, man. I'm just trying to be positive a little bit.
You feel good about that?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Okay.
You know, every time you bring a guy on, to be honest with you, I get nervous. Mm-hmm. And then I do my work and I do my homework on it. And then we get through the fucking interview and I'm like, oh, that was cool. Like, all right. But at the beginning, I'm like, God, this guy, God, he's so much better. He's so much better than me at everything.
What makes you nervous?
Because I'm such a low totem pole piece of shit when it comes to the hockey world, except for the entertainment part, maybe on Twitter and stuff. I find, like, but as far as like the hockey part, like, I just feel low. And when you talk to people that are that high, I don't know. I just got to kind of play my game with them a little bit without being like knowing where my status is. Does that make sense? In the locker room a little bit.
No,
right?
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you. Because we're bringing on like the biggest names ever,
dude.
Like monsters, Hall of Famers. But you feel more comfortable when you have like a Darren McCarty on, for example.
Or even Kevin Steen. Oh, God, guys like that. Or even like Ryan Smith and guys that maybe I met or something where I'm like, what's up, dude? We had a beer together. Like, that is easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy that. I don't
even
really,
Chelios, who's a legend, man. I mean, he's easy
he made
to,
me nervous a little bit because I embarrassed myself in front of him one time, and I
oh yeah, you
I, maybe
did.
He hated me or
what
something.
What did you say?
I just
You asked him if Downey got a ring, and he's like, dude, Downey wasn't even on the team.
No, he wasn't on the team, and we didn't win the cup. You fucking moron!
Oh, you didn't even win the
you
cup.
You know, I'm gonna bang your girlfriend in front of you too. I'm like, oh Jesus! No, he didn't say that, but I'm just like, you might as well. At that point, that was fucking horribly embarrassing.
Oh,
so
my God.
I do. It's weird, man. Like, and if everybody's in this situation, not too many people do podcasts like we do and interview big boys like that. You just, you know, you're good at it. You've gone to school for it. You've done it your whole life. I'm just still getting into it, and it's
but
a little nerve wracking. That's
is,
all.
This is the school for.
No, it's not.
No, I'm saying like
what
you
do mean?
It over
it's
and over again, man. That's how you learn how to do it.
It's like we do a radio show every day.
But give yourself some credit.
Thanks,
listen, Kevin Stevens. I got a text from him yesterday. I just want to give him a quick shout out because you know we love Kevin. Like, there's something about when you see him happy and smiling and laughing, it almost makes you want to cry.
I
to see him get the hole in one. Did you see the video?
Oh God. I saw him and he's walking down to the hole and his buddies are laughing. They're like grabbing him. They're like, yeah. And he's just happy. He's happy and he's sober. And you can see in his eyes, he's sober and he's normal and he feels good. And he's like, he had that natural euphoric high that he probably hasn't like built up in a long, long time because of all the stuff he's gone through. And for him to see that in his eyes, Andy, I text you right away when you fucking tweeted that. I'm like, oh my God, I almost cried, man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I love that guy.
Well, that tells you how great of an athlete he is, too.
I love him.
This guy's getting
well, I almost got a hole in one
ones.
The other day, but it actually missed like 40
feet. It wasn't even close.
I faked it.
Carlo Colaiacovo, he got mad at you, too.
I know. Why is everybody mad at me?
Well, come on.
What did he do? Oh, God, what did I say?
Because you said he loves Petro.
Yeah. Something like that. I think he wants to marry him or something. I was joking. Carl, I'm joking.
He knows that.
But you do love him a lot, and that's fine. But we didn't know that Toronto fans listen to 590 the Fan in St. Louis for our shows, eh, Andy?
What do you make out of this whole Petro situation? Like, what's your honest opinion?
I don't even fucking care.
But by the way, you're like an insider. You're breaking news.
Why am I the insider?
And like some guy named Sergey is saying, Cam broke the news.
You broke it 2 days beforehand on TSN. I say it on my stupid-ass AM radio show. Show in Missouri,
in
St. Louis, Missouri, and they clip it off from Toronto and they say that I'm the one that, no, I'm not the one, nor do I want to be the one. Andy, that's your job. I entertained, you break fucking news. That's how it goes. I'm not the fucking deal breaker. I'm not Insider Cam hashtag if you want to post that on
Insider
anything.
Cam. No, we're going to start calling
Cam.
You that.
Start hashtagging
Cam.
That. Piss off Andy a little bit. No, but that's a big deal. When you do all this goddamn work, you talk to Army, you talk to Petro, you talk to Tom Stillman, you talk to Wayne Gretzky, you talk to all these guys, you do all that shit, the same shit that I don't do. I don't fucking call anybody. I don't want to. When people call me, I'm like, talk to Andy. You do that, and all of a sudden, people give me credit, or Nick Kyprios, or anybody else, because they gave Nick Kyprios credit that he's the one that announced the 8x8. Like, Andy said this on TSN 2 days before this.
It doesn't bother me if somebody gives you credit. It's kind of funny, though.
It's funny because no one takes me seriously.
Well,
okay.
No, but here's the
but
deal.
But Nick Kipper is a different story. We love Nick.
Here's the deal. You will say publicly, like, don't give me credit. I didn't
say
shit. Other people will be like, oh, they're crediting me with breaking it.
Oh,
yes,
I did my homework.
Yes, I did.
Bullshit. talking about this for 3 fucking days.
You know, that's the hard part sometimes, you know, and it's not all about, like, you know, breaking news and whatever. I mean, listen, I've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. I still
want
to break news.
Keep doing it.
But, you know, roles change and everything kind of changes a little bit in terms of what you can and cannot report, and I'm totally fine with that, man. It's never been an issue.
Yeah, but you have a relationship with all these guys.
But there are certain times when I truly love reporting, man. I love gathering information. I love breaking news. I love reporting stuff.
Calling, talking, brainstorming.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole path to trying to, you know, gather as much information as possible and try to report as much original content as possible. I don't like
Helps
to report what everybody else is reporting. Exactly. Some people are comfortable with that. I don't like doing that. I try to report stuff that isn't out or is new or it's fresh and whatever. And, you know, when you're in St. Louis and the volume isn't nearly as high and it's not as loud as it is in Toronto or a Canadian city, and, you know, you go on Toronto news or, you know, your radio shows or you put it on Twitter, and it's easy for somebody in Toronto to take what you said and use it for themselves, and all of a sudden, there is so much attention there.
But don't they know that you reported a day before,
People
though?
Don't credit you, though. That's the difference. There's a couple of insiders, one or two, up in Canada, who work at the network level that I have a ton of respect for. I got a lot of respect for a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
But a couple of them who will attribute information to others. There are others that just will not do it, no matter what. And it's ego-driven, and I think it's really stealing at the end of the day. And people send it to me all the time. If I report something, and then a quote-unquote insider up in Toronto or somebody like that reports it and uses your information as their own, people send that stuff to me all the time. And I'm not going to lie. It'll bother you a little bit, especially when you're working hard and, you know, they'll attribute information to other people that they work with, that they work closely with up in Toronto, man. But, you know, it is what it is. It's been like that for a long
time. That's a game you're in, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly.
That's why I don't want to fucking deal.
Exactly.
I got to call somebody up and be like, you fuck. You just fucking tweeted that out and you just talked about it on 15 different networks and you said that you claim that yourself. I just talked to Doug. I just talked to fucking Petro and I tweet. And then you, wait, what? Mm-hmm. I'd be like, what?
But it makes
Thank
you.
God, I'm not
It makes
doing
you
that
sound
shit.
like you're.
Fuck that.
Like you're self-serving or something like that when you have to tell people.
I know.
Like, no, like,
I know.
So, like,
especially
even,
guys that we do
even last
with.
Night, you were like, hey, you should text this guy. And I didn't do that, man. I'm not going to do that.
No, then don't. I don't want you to get
in
trouble.
At the end of the day, it
either.
Doesn't really matter that much to me as long as – because they know. They know where they got some of the information. And a lot of some of the – I'm not referring to a couple – like people like Darren Dreger, man, and Bob McKenzie. And
hey, Dave fucking.
Even
Dave
like
knows.
Even
yeah.
like Elliot Friedman, man.
Hell
they,
yeah.
These guys are – I mean, I have so much respect for those guys, man. They have so much
shit.
Information. They
Fucking
know their ain't. Stuff. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say there haven't been times when you report something and you don't get the attribution, but it is what it is, man.
Insider Cam. Hashtag
Insider
baby.
Cam. Now you're the
Hashtag
insider.
Hashtag baby. But I'm a fucking insider.
But the whole Petro thing, I don't know.
Whatever. I mean,
it's so loud right now and it's such a big deal. I mean, not only because he's the number one free agent that's going to be available potentially. It sounds like it, and it's certainly heading in that direction for October 9th. But it's because there's a chance he may sign in Toronto, and all these guys are so giddy about the Maple Leafs. They love the Maple Leafs,
Fuck.
And so they just won't stop talking about it. If the rumor was he was going to sign in Florida,
no one gives
or he
fuck.
Was going to sign in Columbus, this would not be getting the same amount of attention.
Dude, I did rip Toronto a little bit, and look,
where did you say that?
Let me explain something real quick. When I'm on my radio show. I shoot Andy just like we do. We just shoot this shit, and I'm just fucking talking. I'm like, yeah, you know, all these contracts, man. When they're 30 years old, you go to Toronto, man. This doesn't fucking work out. It's too much. It's too loud.
You're referring to like David Clarkson, man.
Yeah, guys like that. Like, name me a guy that was successful. They went to Toronto at over 30 and signed a big contract. Like, did you win the cup? Let me check. No, you didn't. Not since I've been alive. So, I mean, I still have somewhat of a point. I was a little bit of a dick about it, but when you're talking on the radio, you're just like shooting the shit with your buddy.
Did you say that on your show here?
On my show in St. Louis,
okay.
And they're listening it because you could podcast it, and they clipped it off and they quoted me, and they put it on Twitter, and it sounds so like when you put that verbatim, quote for quote, it's like holy fuck, and I'm like Jesus. So I had to like defend myself, like yeah, that was a bit harsh. I don't even remember saying it, but then I talked to my my co-host today. He's like, yeah, we did, but I don't even remember you saying that. I mean, like, didn't it wasn't like staunch, because that's how we talk. But if you, again, quote you in your radio show, it's not like you tweeted out yourself and you posted up there. I'm like, okay, I got to backpedal a little bit here. And then, of course, you chime in and said, no, Cam didn't report that, which I fucking didn't.
But joking. Like, but I said Cam.
No, I know.
But I'm like, Cam isn't trying to. That's the thing about you. You're not trying to, the insider.
I want
to
be the opposite of the insider. I want to be that guy who knows nothing. Can I be that guy?
You know what? I will say this about Cam. There are times like when I like have some like real juicy like scoop or information that I can't report, that I know I can't report. And you're like, dude, don't even tell me.
Because people call me all day about shit. And I'm like, I don't get off of me. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Stop.
And right now, especially with this Petro thing going on, people are texting you left and right.
I can't. All different types of people. I can't take it.
And it's like, I'm just kind of.
Go to work.
I'm just kind of shutting it down. Let's just get to October 9th.
God damn. Then
we'll see what happens. But for the sake of the discussion, the situation with Petrangelo, I mean. I've said this for the last couple of days, and I really believe this. I think part of Alex Petrangelo is excited about being a free agent and seeing what's out there.
And competing with all the other big dogs as far as his competition with money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who made what? Who made this? Like, when you're that big and powerful, like Petro is, you win the cup, you have a status figure, and you're like, no, wait, no. I just played 30 minutes. I was unbelievable in the playoffs. I was fucking great in pretty much every single game. If it wasn't for Petro, they wouldn't have won the cup. I mean, they just wouldn't have won the cup. Like, Binnington, Petro, like, those guys were un...
Well, I mean, no.
And Petro, I mean,
he was a big part of it. They certainly don't win it. Listen, let me just say this, Cam. Binner's different.
Okay,
so they were last in the NHL until they got Binnington and Chief took over. And the combination of those two with O'Reilly, then you
look at Petro's numbers halfway through.
And then you look at the way Pareko played, but and now Bullmeister, all those guys.
But Petro was the lead dog, okay?
Dude, he was great in the final.
It was the final game. How's that? Well, badass fucking
maybe
goal.
Maybe one of the best games he ever played.
I know.
Not the best game he's ever played. And I will say this about Petro, man. He carried it on to this year. He carried it over. This is the best I've ever seen him play this season. No doubt.
So my point is, he's like, no, I'm the fucking big dog.
Yeah.
Okay, wait, Yossi, I know he won the North. This, that, and the other. Like, no, I need to be comparable to that. But on the other hand, you're in a small market team, bro. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're in a small market team. They didn't make any money this year. They're not going to make any money next year. Okay, they're not making that much goddamn money.
Well, they're like a lot of people.
There's a flat cap. They're not billionaires. There's a lot that goes into this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have to take that as a business side of things and take that in consideration. Hey. You want to be the big dog and loud because of numbers? Fine. Right. Or you want to be a big dog in St. Louis and say, no, I took a little bit less because I know the situation and I'm going to be the motherfucker here for the next 8 years.
My thing is always this, Cam. It's, you know, I just don't like the drama that comes with it. I mean, I understand that you've got a lot of connections here. You were drafted here. You played your entire career here. You won a Stanley Cup here. Your wife is from here. But at the end of the day, the Blues are making an offer. It's just not the offer that you want. So if you leave, you're still choosing to leave.
And it's not that much of a difference.
So, depending, it's all about how they structure the deal, as we've talked about in nauseam. You know, in terms of signing bonus money and how they structure the deal, front-loading money, you know, getting that no-movement clause towards the end of the contract that gives you buyout protection and all that type of stuff. I get all that. But you are choosing to leave if you leave, because the Blues are putting a pretty substantial contract on the table. Now, so I've said this from the beginning. I truly believe part of Alex Petrangelo wants to see what's out there. And wants to feel that love
and that attention
from some of these friends. And I don't blame him for that.
I get it. And
with that being said, I also think part of the St. Louis Blues, just based on what they're offering and how they're negotiating, I think deep down they understand what comes with the territory if they lose Alex Petrangelo. And I think they've come to grips to say, hey, you know what? We will survive. And we're going to be okay if we lose Alex Petrangelo.
Business, baby.
You know?
Just like what the old boy did in Jersey with some of the big boys that are coming up. They had fucking fights back and forth. We had Scotty Nieder.
How often do we see superstars go to free agency?
Think about it.
It happens all the time.
But like how many times did Lou Lamoriello have like toe-to-toe battles with the biggest big dogs on the team?
Yeah.
Like Niedermeyer, we had them all on.
The only thing I don't want to see, man, I mean, when you got a guy who is the captain of the team, they just won the cup. It's here in St. Louis. Let's not have drama. Let's not have drama. Let's not negotiate through the media.
Thank you.
With 3 weeks to go before we get to unrestricted free agency,
and the Blues have when you got four kids in St. Louis, you know it's easy here. A little ex-Rams cheerleader. I know how that goes. If you marry an ex-Rams cheerleader, you're staying in St. Louis, bro. Like,
what does that have to
do with it? I'm just letting you know. Like, you grew up here. Like, she's here. She knows
every ex-Rams cheerleader.
If you're a big dog in St. Louis and you want to come to St. Louis, you want to marry an ex-cheerleader, they want to stay in St. Louis.
But do you blame him? He's earned the right, man. This guy's been a great player, man. He's earned the right to decide what he wants to do with his career.
Yeah. You got one vote. Your wife's got another. And the Blues know that. You got four fucking kids. I don't give a shit if you're from Toronto or not. That jump to move places when you are so settled here, it's unbelievable. You think the Blues fuck with Petro? Andy, do you think the Blues go to Petro and say, I need you to do this, that? Petro's like,
I need you to go to sign autographs.
What the fuck are you talking about?
West County Mall today.
You go to Toronto. Now you're starting from scratch.
Yeah, but they're paying you $100,000 to do it.
Give a fuck. You're spending that $100,000. You're going to go to a car dealership and sit around with a bunch of swinging dicks? Not Bellman. You're going to a fucking weirdo car dealership in Toronto, and they're paying you some money. Now you got to do commercials and this. Now they're like, no, we need you over here.
Yeah, but some people like that attention.
You think Petro wants that attention at 31 years old in a different town when you have four kids and they're driving you crazy as it is?
But let me say this, though.
Get on.
Different town, but it's his hometown.
He's
his 30 hometown.
Miles away.
So, no, and that's another thing people don't realize, that people are like, oh, he's got a house there and stuff like that. Listen, from what I understand, his house is an hour outside of the city.
Thank you.
He's going to have to buy a new house. It's not like he's like can just slide right into his house and go to Toronto. But I'm with you because, you know, Petro likes to keep a low profile.
Does.
Away from the rink. He's got four kids, so in reality, you don't have much choice than to keep a low profile. I've talked to like people like David Backus about this at length, dude. And when you build up your community with a franchise in a town where you're drafted, where you're a big dog, and you have a foundation and you know everything is great, and you leave and you're in your 30s and you have young kids, it's tough to recapture in a second city, man.
So
it's very
hard,
difficult to do that.
And here's the deal. Petro could be.
And I talked to Pronger about this even years ago, too. When he left St. Louis to go to Edmonton.
Oh, Jesus.
You know how difficult that
and
was?
And then he goes to the Cup. He still went to the Cup, though.
And he still had to get out of there.
I know. Well, but here's the deal. If Petro goes out, he won the Cup here, and he fucking signs an 8-8 or whatever it is, and he's in St. Louis, and he plays like shit. Do you think it's that hard on him when he plays like shit in St. Louis after he just won the Cup? I know he's making a lot of money. I know maybe the media here. You think the media here's tough? Get the fuck on. He's listening to our show, making sure we're not chirping him here and there.
Like,
they don't get. Wait. My point is, like, you think that. You don't really realize how easy you're going to have it for the next 8 years here. Even if you don't win again, like, it's not going to be that hard. If you go to Toronto or anywhere, they're expecting you to go places. And if you don't, the negativity will
be tough.
10 times harder.
Because
that's
you
what I'm saying.
Because and your family's reading it.
Oh.
Everywhere your family goes now, they're being asked about it. Like,
Andy,
it's different. It's different. But you know what? Even Brian Burke talked about this when we had him on. It's not about what they're saying. It's no different than what they say in different markets. It's the volume. It's the number of people. And I always go back to what Roman Polak told. I thought it's one of the most like fascinating
huge
things
penis.
A player has ever told me. Yep. He didn't tell me that.
Well,
he didn't tell me
didn't
that.
Have to tell you that. It's sniffing the drain.
But you know what? He said he felt more pressure playing in St. Louis than he did playing in Toronto. Now, he's not
really
a star player, but he said, I'll tell you this right now. Playing in St. Louis was way more difficult, and I felt way more pressure than I did when I played in Toronto. Now, Toronto's a little bit different now versus when he played.
Really?
But he said when he was here in St. Louis, the pressure, the internal expectations inside the dressing room from management,
that's fine, then.
From ownership was so strong. That was real pressure. You knew there was pressure to win because of the pressure internally.
That's the pressure you want.
These guys, and listen, Roman would say this, and I talked to Petro about this too recently, man. Like you think and you were a player, dude. They're not listening to sports radio all the time. They're not reading the newspaper or all that. That does not bother
Twitter's
these
Twitter's a different story.
When you're making money and you're hanging out with the boys, you can kind of get away from that. It is what it is. But
no one bothers you when you walk you walk around town in St. Louis, people praise you. You could be minus 15 the night before. You could fucking do stupid shit the night before. You go to a bar in St. Louis, they'll still love you. They still look at you like in awe. You go in Toronto, they're dissecting everything about
you.
They're
still worshiping you, though, man. Big time.
They are, but
and you know
they're
what?
More critical in Toronto.
And how about this? And he has confidence in himself.
Yeah. We love you, Toronto, by the
he
way.
He has confidence in himself. And if he does have success there, If he does bring a Stanley Cup there,
that's a different story.
What does that mean for his?
Well, then he's going to be
for his legacy.
Well, then he's going to own an island in a fucking Fiji then, or if either he's going to make a little bit more money, he's going to own a bigger island than he's going to own now, or have a fucking animal sanctuary bigger than what. So what?
I just don't subscribe to the idea that the Blues should just give him whatever he wants because he's the captain and because he's been a great player. Listen, there is such thing as a, you know, organizational philosophy, how you do things, and you stick to it. And at the end of the day, if you truly want to be here,
then be here.
Then you stay. And you know what? It may not be. You've already made a lot of money.
Hey.
And you may not get $10 million in signing bonus. You know, and whatever else you know you're wanting in the first handful of years, first half of the contract.
Yeah,
but. You're happy. Your family's here.
Your house
you won
is paid
a cup.
Off.
You're the captain, and they're still going to give you.
You know where your coffee shop
north
is?
Of $60 million stay.
You know who's like taking care of your kids? You already have like fucking nannies out the wazoo.
So let's not like do the whole like pulling at my heartstring type thing because I get that it may be difficult to leave, but if the Blues weren't offering you a contract, I'd understand why. You know what? This isn't right. But they are putting a pretty substantial contract on the table.
Here's another thing, too. When COVID hits, Andy and I look at it like this.
And I don't blame Petro either, man.
No, I know.
Not one
bit,
get that. Dude.
And we don't, we want, you know, we love Toronto and we love all that stuff. But on the other hand, it's like, you know, we see this organization. We're so internal with the St. Louis Blues organization. We know the ownerships. We know everybody. We know the ins and outs of what's going on. Like, we really fucking do. Like, we don't want the organization to be tied up with a bad contract.
No,
like we don't.
No.
Like
that's
we,
what
we,
I mean. That's
we
what I mean.
Don't.
I think deep down, I think they realize, okay,
fans might,
we're gonna be
but
okay.
We don't.
And you know who knows with Doug Armstrong? I don't want to throw out anything crazy out there. Who knows what he does with this cap space? The Blues are going to be a cap team,
of course.
So now they're going to have cap space freed up. And as Doug Armstrong has always told me, hey, you can always get somebody in free agency.
Find somebody, baby. And somebody can't afford somebody.
As much as I'm not a fan of Taylor Hall, he'd look pretty damn good here.
Oh, Vladdy gone? I mean,
no, I'm just saying. Adding some speed to a roster. Well, I'm not suggesting they're going to go out there and sign Taylor Hall. I'm not a huge fan of his game overall, but you know
his
what?
His playoff game, at least, yeah, no doubt.
But he does bring an element that maybe they could use, get faster.
You come to a winning team, it changes you, Phil Kessel. How you doing?
There's players that can be traded.
Mm-hmm.
You can't predict when Doug Armstrong goes into stealth mode, man. You cannot predict what this guy is going to do.
You think he's just sitting back like, well, okay,
yeah. And I think
I'm gonna golf at Bellevue.
I think internally they truly believe that Justin Falk is a much better player than what we saw this past year. They really believe that. Now, he has to be better.
Can't get worse.
And he has to be better. He did not play well.
I don't judge people with the bubble, though, man.
But
I just don't.
And he played well in the bubble.
Yeah, it's hard to judge anybody
okay,
off that. But go ahead.
But I will say, and I think you have to give it one more year.
I hear you.
I don't think you can make your full evaluation based off of him walking into a situation, dude, where he's uncomfortable, the team just won the cup, first game of the season, banner raising ceremony, they're skating around with the cup, and he's sitting in the dressing room
White
by
House,
himself.
All that,
like,
all the
and
shit.
And then they go to the Hall of Fame, they have the ring ceremony, and he goes fishing by himself all day long.
Goes to the White House. They
he
don't
go to the
there.
White House. Fucking, he's walking around D.C. by himself. Again,
guys are fucking hanging out with Trump.
And, Cam, you're walking into a dressing room where the captain of the team is in the final year of his deal. He's pissed off. Because you just
million.
Got signed, yeah. And everyone's speculating that now because you just got your contract, that it's going to prevent the team from re-signing the captain
Braden
of the
Shinny
team.
Braden Shinny gets fucking signed.
I know.
Although he had his he could have signed too, though.
He could have.
There's so much to it. We don't know everything. Andy certainly knows more than 99.99%
of people. I will say you're 100% right, man. There's a lot of misinformation that's
so
out
much.
There.
I know, dude.
There's a lot of misinformation.
Stop asking me about it. Fuck. I'm sick of it. I'm not the insider, although hashtag insider Cam, baby. I'm not. Nor do I want to be. Ask Andy. Don't fucking bug me. Ask me about what you're doing and how many Bud Light seltzers you've been drinking.
And let us know what you're doing in the hashtag chill zone, too,
chill
baby.
Chill zone, baby. Where's your fucking chill zone? Holy macaroni. What's Petro's chill zone going to look like? Is he going to be on a fucking island looking over with his fucking center console with 15 fucking engines on the back of that bad boy? Why not?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to see. I don't give a shit if you live in a trailer park. Show me your little setup, man. I don't care. I've lived in bullshit houses, too. Show it to me. What's your happy place? I want to see it. Go. No, not you, Andy, because I know your happy place. It's a fucking pond down the road. I'm Dude, saying go with the sponsorships.
Lake. I might go back to the lake this weekend.
Actually. It's not a lake.
It is a lake. It's a lake.
Can you put a boat on it?
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How far can you go with that boat?
If I think it's
15 feet?
No, I think it stretches like 3/4 of a mile or something.
Oh, does it? Get the fuck out of here. Fucking pond.
Maybe a half mile.
It's got algae everywhere. It's 3 feet of algae. And there's Put the boat on there.
And there's kids there.
Yeah, okay. I don't deal with that
shit. Listen, I know we've gone on for a while. I want to ask you something. I should have asked you earlier.
What?
But, so the league puts out this video, you know?
Oh, Lord.
Everybody's blocking shots, like taking hits to make a play.
Fucking A.
Pucks in the face, sticks in the face, blood everywhere. And they're saying, hey, man, you've got to pay. This is what, you know, winning the Stanley Cup was all about, man. It's paying the price.
Okay.
And it's fighting through injury.
Okay.
And you got Daniel Carcillo, who's an alum of the Cam and Strick podcast.
I know.
And we had a real interesting conversation when he came on with us. Yeah, man, but he tweets, take my name off it twice. You think he really believes that?
No, I know. Well,
what if they said, okay.
Okay, I will.
We're taking your name off.
He already made his money. He's already got his name on there. It doesn't matter now. Okay, so it's easy to say that.
He make a lot of money?
No. But you're making your money off winning the cup twice, and that's why he's starting his campaign. But if he didn't win the cup twice, like, it's harder to do what he's doing now. Even making a movement for positivity and
even
head
making
injuries,
a movement and having an audience who listens to you is because you
imagine
played
you didn't play exactly.
Hockey,
you think you'd have a million views on that thing? Like, it just doesn't work that way. Now, I do truly believe that he's changed.
Was that his face on the video that started it?
Yeah, remember. Remember,
with the Band-Aid or whatever? Is that his face?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. But no, that was Barzell. What are you talking about?
Okay.
No. No, when Daniel Carcillo did the thing where he posted a video on his face and he's talking about head injuries, and it blew up. But the reason why he did it is because you're Daniel Carcillo, you knock guys out, you did this, you did that, you're allowed, you're popular, and that's what happens.
Yeah.
Do I think Daniel Carcillo believes in what he believes in? Yes. I think he does. Do I think he's right on everything? No. Do I disagree with a lot of things he says? Of course I do. But that video was just like, this is a sacrifice that you make, because that's how hard it is to fucking win a cup. Now everybody's like, oh, you're putting on a pedestal injuries. And my rebuttal to that would be, pain is always going to be part of hockey. It's always going to be a part of hockey. And if it's not, then hockey isn't hockey anymore. It's how you deal with the pain management. That's the question. You're going to get hurt. You're going to have pain, and you're going to suck it the fuck up. How do you deal with it? That's the question. But everybody on there, all the people that don't play hockey, which is fine.
This is gross.
This is gross. This is disgusting. This is, what do you mean? He blocked a shot.
I mean, this is the history of the
he
game.
He blocked off. Fuck.
That's why everyone's always said it's the most difficult trophy
to win. So
what
do you want
to
do?
You know, that you do have to sacrifice. You know, even watching this on TSN the other day,
Quincy.
That's
what I'm talking
about. I hear Kyle Quincy's a great dude.
Great guy.
People who play with him, whatever, man, just, you know, speak highly of him. But, you know, he's talking about how, you know, in hockey, the mentality, you got to do whatever you can to get back in the lineup.
Yeah.
Do whatever you can. If you're hurt, suck it up, take some pain medicine, whatever.
Yeah, well,
okay?
Well.
No, I know, and I'm not a big fan.
Well, suck it up.
That's a different story.
Or don't play.
You got to do whatever you can. They expect you. They rely on you to be back in the lineup. So I get that. But during this video, so he's kind of being critical, maybe throwing the trainers under the bus, you know. What's his name from Vancouver's doing the same thing?
Kessler.
Ryan Kessler doing the same thing. You know,
although he still wants to play.
But he's like made like $70 million
Fuck us over on a podcast. How the fuck are you at, Kessler?
But then he comes out and he tweets, he goes, I do it all over again. So I'm just really confused. But even Kyle Quincy, they're showing him run a youth hockey practice. And he's like talking to guys. Hey, you got to find ways to impact the game outside of just having skill. What do you think he's talking
You're
about? Toe dragging guys?
Yeah.
No, he's saying you got to block shots. You got to win battles. You got to have a strong stick.
Watch the Stanley Cup Finals.
You got to pay a price to make a play. That's what he's saying.
Watch the Stanley Cup Finals. Don't tell all those guys not to block shots. Tell Dallas not to block shots. See what happens. Tell fucking Tampa not to block shots. See what happens. Tell Tampa not to hit. See what happens. There was 1,000 hits. There were so many hits in that last game to where Doc Emmerich was like, here's another hit. Here's another hit. Here's another hit. Here's another hit. Here's another. It was insanity. Now, again, how do you deal with the pain, bruh? Don't you fucking get caught up in painkillers.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
There's CBD. There's so many different options. We're going to do this next time. We're going to talk about this
next time.
We'll
get into that.
We're going a little bit overboard here.
Yeah.
We're going to go next time, guys. We get it. We get it. I just don't like when people come out, when they see a video like that, and they're like, this is disgusting. This is not hockey. You're promoting injuries. Motherfucker. There's going to be injuries in every sport. Mm-hmm. How do you motherfucking deal with it?
You're telling me
motherfucking a team
that,
drive me crazy.
That wins the Super Bowl. I mean, you got a football player out there, Tyrod Taylor, getting an injection in his ribs that puncture his lung.
Like, come on. Oh, he's going to sue them for fucking 10 schmil, just like Reggie Bush did in fucking San Cronkyville and St. Louis when he slipped on that fucking thing.
The doctor said, yeah, I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. I'll shoot you up.
No, it's a Simpsons doctor. Hi, how you doing?
I think I hit your lung.
Dumb fuck.
On accident.
Fucking idiot.
You think how pissed off is he?
Tyrod?
But, you know, you look at,
fucking sue the guy.
Even during
the Michael
Jordan documentary, what they had to do to overcome getting past the Detroit Pistons and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they used to get beaten up.
Remember Michael got beat, slammed down by, who's a big white guy with a big glass?
Bill Laimbeer.
That guy fucking smacked him around, and all of a sudden they figured it out.
Yeah.
Michael went to the gym, he got fucking big, and he's like, no, I'm King Dick, homie. You fucking goofy-looking white boy, I'm getting you.
It's competition, man. Yeah. It's just a battle. But I don't know.
Sorry, guys. We went a little far on this one.
Let's not take it too far out of context.
Let's go. We got sponsors to talk about here.
All right. We got Neil Smith on this episode,
He's awesome. Oh, my. Andy, when you said, I'm going to get Neil Smith, and I go, oh, cool. GM Rangers. I didn't know too much about him.
But I was like, dude, he's in the mix of everything.
He answered every question like he was under a fucking... lie detector test.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay,
it's like
Neil,
a deposition.
Okay, Neil, tell me your worst feeling you've ever had in your life. What is the worst thing you've ever done to your family? Like something. So he's like, hey, well, I murdered a guy and buried him in my backyard.
And I'll tell you exactly where it is. Right now.
Tell you where it's at, Cam. It still stinks back there. That's hardcore. He didn't do that. But it was kind of the same
way.
But
he answered everything.
He answered everything. It's like therapy session for these guys. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm your therapist.
So listen, you may not know who Neil Smith is, like if you're a younger listener and you're like, okay, this isn't going to be, dude.
Mango.
Do not overlook this episode. This guy is so good.
So good.
And, you know, I've known Neil for a long time, but, you know, when we had Kevin Stevens on and he talked about how Neil Smith, man, he owes a lot to Neil Smith for staying back away from the team when, you know, Kevin got in some trouble in East St. Louis. Who got him out of jail? It was Neil Smith. I was like, okay, we got to get Neil on. And then, you know, you realize that he's in the mix of everything from Lindros to Messier to Mike Keenan, dude, to Mike Milbury. Oh, my God. You've got to listen to this episode of the Cam and Strick podcast.
Let's
brought to you by CarShield and CarShield.com. You need that protection. Yeah. I mean, you absolutely need that protection. I say this all the time when it comes down to CarShield. It's not a one-size-fits-all. You customize your deal. Customize the type of protection that you want. So if you don't want a long-term commitment, guess what? You don't have to. It doesn't cost a lot of money, Cam, every month.
It's so easy.
It is easy as can be. 800-857-2481. 800-857-2481. CarShield.com. Mention the promo code Cam and you're going to save 10%. CarShield.com. Mention that promo code Cam. You never know when something's going to go down with your car. It could cost you thousands of dollars, but guess what? It won't. But only if you have that protection.
Real quick. Yeah. I was in Eureka. I told this story before. My starter didn't work. I got kind of a new car. Didn't work. And I had to leave my car there. Everybody's like watching me. Like, oh, why is Cam not getting in his car leaving the restaurant?
It's a truck.
Truck, whatever the fuck. They're like, why is he not doing that? And I'm like, oh, I got to call my fucking parents to pick me up with my wife. And everybody's like, what's going on here? Call CarShield. They pick my truck up in 2 seconds. They go, where do you want to go? I go, there's a place right up the road. Good people, Eureka people. They took it right up there. They fix it in 2 goddamn seconds. They dropped it right off my house. And I'm like, oh, my car's here. Oh, okay. It was the easiest damn thing I've ever been through in my life. Check them out. I'm telling you, they're the real deal. It's cheap, it's easy, and it simplifies your goddamn life. That's all that matters. Go.
CarShield.com, baby.
Yeah, baby.
And don't forget about Bellman and Bellman.com.
Damn right.
New cars, used cars. Our boy Dan Bellman just hooking it up.
Awesome dude.
He is an awesome dude.
Comfortable
and he
going
loves
in there.
The game. Danny boy, you're going to love a podcast we have coming up very soon,
shit.
Too.
He
it's
loves
right down
shit.
Your alley.
He loves
He's going to love
shit.
That. And you're going to love today's, too, with Neil Smith. So check this out. If you're looking for a Cadillac, a Buick, a GMC, Cam's looking at the Buick right now.
I don't mind Buicks anymore.
No,
they're cool now.
You're looking at the Buicks.
No, they're cool now.
Yeah.
They're cool now. I kind of want a dually. I'm looking at a dually. I'm looking at one of those XRTs, those Jeep Grand Cherokees.
I could see you in a Buick Enclave or something like that.
An Enclave?
Yeah.
I mean, Andy, I could drive anything and kind of look cool, to be honest with you. You, on the other hand, probably fucking not. You need like a Hummer with
Escalade.
A fucking...
I'm getting an Escalade.
You need like a 50 cal and a Hummer for you to look somewhat kind of scary. Maybe.
Scary.
You come down with a 50 cal, like, what are you going to do, pussy? What?
Oh, my God.
You're going to shoot me and kill me, I guess.
Located in Troy. Yeah. Across the street, Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Man, get that Jeep. I'd love to have a Jeep in the fall.
A pink one.
With two-door small
wheels. I want the small rims and wheels. Yes. That's what's cool right now.
Soft top.
If you like that, you like that. If you don't, you don't. They got
options.
But
you said you keep the doors on, though. You know, because
I have vertigo. Yeah. I got vertigo.
Yeah, you leave the doors on.
Yeah. God, I'm
are the windows up or no?
I don't know. I got fucked up sometimes.
So check it out. The Chrysler, the Dodge, the Jeep Ram. You may even want to look at a Dodge, dude.
Dodge is all right, man. Yeah. They got big-ass trucks. Nice. My dad had. I remember my dad getting that brand-new Dodge back in the 90s, dude. I'm like, wow, we got a new Dodge Ram. Sick tough. They're cool.
But you know what? Just get out there. Tell them we sent you. They're going to treat you with respect. And if you can't make it, have no fear. Send your girl by herself, dude. It's all good.
I don't want to get too detailed in that, but your wife feels comfortable. Do I need to say it? I'm not going to say it this time. I'm going to be classy this time. Dan, I'm going to be classy. But when your wife goes into Bellman, like, they're comfortable. Everybody's like, here, come on in here, sit down. Whatever you guys want to do, chill. We'll give you a water. Here's
they're not looking through the window. Like,
they're not looking through the window.
Oh, my, I got her.
Is that fucking came dancing fucking my...
I got her.
I used to beat your fucking... Fuck you. You psycho.
Hey, listen, I got this one. I got this one.
Is that that blonde coming in here? Oh, my God. I'm going to get her.
I got her. Weirdo. Let me get her.
Fucking hate it. That doesn't happen at Bellman. Everywhere else that happens, swinging dicks coming out.
I went 30-0 in high school wrestling.
I used to beat the shit out of him back. What the f-? Kate's like, what you say, you psycho fuck? I'll smack you in your
None
fucking
None of those
head.
Guys work at Bellman.
No, they don't. God, no.
They all want to work at Bellman, but they can't work there.
No, they don't make a lot of money going to Bellman.
Will not hire
you. No, not creep. They don't hire creeps. They class.
So check out Bellman.com, BehlmannN.com, Bellman.com, again, located in Troy, Missouri. How about Gadget Lab?
Oh, man.
If you have a cracked phone a cracked tablet.
Come on.
Let me tell you all the time, dude. You're not doing what?
You're not getting pussy. I shouldn't say that. You're not getting laid. If you have a cracked phone, like a girl's like, oh, give me your phone number. She looks at your phone.
I didn't
phone,
know you were
like,
going to say that.
I didn't mean to say that, but fine. But they look at your phone and like, oh, God, it's cracked. Yeah, you suck. Get out of my life. That's what they're going to do. Don't do that.
Potential sponsors, don't listen to that.
I'm sorry, but Jesus Christ, let's go. You're not getting it. You know what I said. You're not getting it.
You're not wheeling.
You're not wheeling that. I'm not going to say it again, but you're not wheeling that specific thing, okay?
That specific thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is what you kind of want.
Gadget Lab. Check it out, gadgetbuyback.com. If you're a business owner, man, turn in your old stuff,
fucking
trade it in for new devices, new tablets, new phones. Make sure your business isn't running slow.
Plus,
they work with some of the biggest corporations in America.
Big boys.
Big boys.
Don't slow your shit down. Yes. Everybody's like looking at you like, why is my shit not fucking working?
Familiarize yourself with who Gadget is.
Keep up the date.
Gadgetbuyback.com. 877-772-8880. Bud Light Seltzer, baby.
Mango. Damn
mango.
I want pictures. I want it all. Mango. I want you cooking. I want that lake. I don't give a shit if you're in a goddamn trailer. Show me what you're drinking. Show me your chill zone. I want your fucking feet kicked up. I want you chilling. You worked your fucking ass off, grinding concrete, fucking doing roof. I don't give a shit what you're doing. You grind all week. I want to see you have that mango, and I want to see your chill zone. I want that barbecue. I want it all, baby. Puts me in a good mood. I love it.
Hashtag chill zone.
Hashtag chill zone.
Where
baby.
You at? Where you at?
Where you at? Where you at? I don't. Again, doesn't have to be fancy. What's your chill, baby? That's what you all needed. I'm telling you guys, man. I'm your therapist. You need your chill zone, man. You and your wife.
Dr.
You
find Cam.
Put the fucking kids away. Sit down on
Insider
your shit.
Cam.
You have your wine with the wife. Like fucking. I'm gonna tweet Cam out real quick. Bop 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 bop. That's what I want.
There you go. Strawberry, black cherry, lemon lime, and mango.
Mango. Mango. It's good.
That's your favorite flavor. Cam's favorite, mango.
Mango.
They also have the variety packs, man. Have you had the pineapple?
Yes, I've had the pineapple.
Have you had the grapefruit?
Yes.
Have you had the cranberry?
Oh, dude, I take that cranberry, baby. I mix a couple different things in that bad boy.
Okay,
it's like, what are you doing? I'm like, don't worry about it. You'll know in an hour.
BudLight.com, you can have it shipped to your house. Again, 5% alcohol, less than a gram of sugar, 100 calories, so it's healthy
for you.
You're
not bloated.
Not going to be bloated.
A piece of shit.
No. Bud Light Seltzer, unquestionably good. HockeyTraining.com. Now listen, Cam, they've got the speed kits.
Andy.
They've got the they've got hockey yoga. You can do yoga now.
Andy.
Hockey yoga. You can do all different types of training with HockeyTraining.com. And I have been doing it.
I'll fucking talk about you. You don't talk about you. Andy's getting a little bit better. His speeds are getting a little bit more. He had a tough road the other day with Kelly Chase was on the other team. And he made Andy go on the other team just so he can go toe to toe with Andy all game. Andy ran Kelly Chase's fucking show. I'm gonna say it out loud. I'm gonna call him out right now. You back checked. You got back. You skated with the puck. You had a couple nice goals. You look a lot better, Andy. I beat you so fucking easily. It's so easy to chirp you, but that game you were fucking good, man. I'm not gonna lie to you. You've been working hard. You've been doing your shit. You fucking slimmed up a little bit. And Chaser didn't even give you the two-hand. That means you're on your game, baby. HockeyTraining.com. Good job, buddy.
He wanted to.
And I want to beak you like you can't believe. Because I'm the insider.
One time, and he laughed about it afterwards.
No.
He was coming for me.
He laughed, and his fucking ears were steaming. That's not a laugh,
I
Andy.
I saw him coming.
He wanted to get
and
you.
And I fumbled
but
the puck.
You, no, but you were... Well, one time. I'm I not going to get into that. Yeah. That's not hockey training. Yeah. That's you just like being tough. The hockey training can't make you be tough. You got to do that your own.
Yeah.
But you got the puck out of the zone. You broke away from a couple guys, man. You dipsy do a couple guys and actually leaned into them a little bit and like kind of use your strength in the corners. Like I evaluate you like you can't believe. I'm like fucking Scotty Bowman watching fucking Fedorov in the early days or something.
Oh my God,
Fetisov, I should say.
Fedorov, he could have been even better if he had.
You look like Fedorov as a righty. I don't know.
HockeyTraining.ru, is that what the Russian? Is that the Russian?
It doesn't matter.
Okay. But HockeyTraining.com, check it out. Men's league players, you need this if you want to get better. You're not going to improve on your own. You're not going to improve just by going out there and skating. I can promise you that. You got to commit yourself.
In the locker room.
Get the speed kit. Hook yourself up. Get your entire
team
to do
it. Do in your basement. Do in your garage. It's so you don't have to spend money. You just put it on your goddamn iPad and do your shit in your basement. Find a little stick handling spot. Do your box jumps. Do your speed training. It's so easy. You don't have to go to Gold's Gym and creep out the girls. Oh, you guys, like, I'm going to Gold's. Oh, you are? I know what the fuck you're doing. Sitting on a treadmill, creeping everybody out. Who are you kidding? Doing your fucking basement, doing your garage, man. It's cheap, it's easy, and it works, man. And when you walk in the locker room, when everybody's in there, and you're like that guy, you're like, oh, hey, what's up? Come on in here. But if you're the other guy that sucks and walks in like, oh, cool, he's here. Oh, yay.
Kevin and Dan, dude, just hook it up. HockeyTrainer.com. They make easy videos, easy to follow, and
so
you don't need any weights.
No.
And become a VIP member like us here on the Cam and Strick podcast. And before we get to Neil Smith, Victor Hockey, we're wearing the hats. Gretzky asked about him the other day.
Yes, he did.
He sent me a text yesterday, the guy, our boy from Victor
send
Hockey.
It to him.
He said,
send them all to
him. He said, hey, I'm going to send you some hats to give to Gretzky.
Yeah. And Paulina.
And Paulina. But actually,
see
Janet.
Her poster?
Actually, Janet.
Oh, yeah.
You called Janet Paulina. Is that true?
I did.
You can't do that.
I fucked that
you
up.
You can't do that.
It's a compliment.
Yeah.
It's a compliment.
Well, it's understandable.
It's a compliment. Like they're fucking related. Like, Jesus, I fuck shit up all the time. Like, that's not that big of a fuck up.
But they're
I didn't call you Paulina.
But they're the nicest people of all time.
So sweet.
I mean,
sweethearts.
Oh, my God. We are so lucky and fortunate that all of a sudden.
We got a pretty good gig.
He's around here in
we
St.
Got a
Louis.
Good gig.
Are you kidding
we
me?
We got a good gig.
But
out the boys.
Victor Hockey, man, check out the hats. VictorHockey.com. These hats are absolutely sick.
They're sick.
Check out the hoodies. Check out the t-shirts. Great fabric.
Fuck yeah.
And
comfy.
Chicks
love it. What the fuck?
Use the promo code Cam and Strick and you're going to save 20%.
Simple.
So we'll save you money.
Simple.
VictorHockey.com. Check out their Instagram, VictorHockeyUSA. And that's also their Twitter account, at VictorHockeyUSA. Twitter and Instagram, VictorHockey.com. All right, we've got Neil Smith, man.
Fucking awesome.
He's in the mix of everything. Do yourself a favor. You're going to listen to this and you're going to say, wow. I had no idea. Neil Smith on the Cam and Strick podcast. Happy to have you on here, Neil, though. It's great to hear your voice. And what are you doing nowadays? Last we saw you, you were working on NHL Network doing some television. So what's keeping you busy now?
No, I'm not doing that now. Now I'm working in the financial business with UBS and just doing that and keeping track of what's going on in hockey, but not really doing anything as far as TV goes.
All right. Did you like doing the TV?
And
I mean, when you're a manager, as long as you were, you win a Stanley Cup. I mean, and then all of a sudden you're on the other side, you're analyzing. Like, are you comfortable doing that, or do you always miss being in the midst of the action?
No, you miss being in the midst of the action all the time. But, and the other thing is there's a lot of downside to TV working in the business because it's like, you know, managers are usually pretty logistical thinking and long-term thinking, and they're not really reactionary like TV guys are supposed to be, you know, like right off the cuff, saying things off the cuff. And so I found myself sometimes being critiqued for, you know, not having enough to say and not being critical enough, and yet that's just not the way I am.
Who would criticize you? You talking about people you worked for, or like on social media and stuff like that?
I think people that I worked for thought that I didn't have enough to say, because the guys you're on with, if you're on with another analyst, then he's machine gunning all the time, and you're just coming in with comments that you think are appropriate. It's like you don't know what you don't have enough to say, and that's what I found was frustrating. Because, and the other thing is that they don't evaluate you based upon what you've done in the game. They evaluate you based upon if they like you or not. Mm. So a guy who's been a fourth line player who you wouldn't even remember being in the NHL.
Hi, Neil.
Are you picking on Cam, Neil?
Louise.
No, I'm not picking on anybody. I'm just saying, even a lot of the backup goalies and things like that, that you can't hardly remember their career. But because the producer, he's up the producer's wahoo, then, you know, he gets a lot of airtime. So it's a frustrating. I found it frustrating.
No, I get it. Andy and I both do TV here in St. Louis, and. Well, I don't like to wear suits and with a camera in my face, and I start sweating a lot. But I tell you this right now, you're right on that, though. They give you the gotcha questions, and you're like, okay, how do I answer this? But you need to sit down and dissect it. But these guys are like, I'll throw a hot take out, because that's kind of what I'm getting paid for.
Yeah, and sometimes they'll say the trade was X for Y and three young players, blah, blah, blah. And the managers don't know the young players. Like, we don't all know every young player out there, right? I mean, guys that aren't even in the NHL yet.
Andy
so
does.
You'll say, well, it depends on how well these three young guys do. But I don't know them. Mm-hmm. And then they'll criticize you after the show saying, well, you can't say you don't know people. Well, how am I supposed to know them?
And then are we supposed to believe that everybody knows everybody, exactly. Neil? Like when they say they know the guy, do they really know him?
Well, that's how they try to fool you. Some of these guys that are on there, you'd think they knew every person in hockey and every player that's coming up and everything. They're just BSing everybody.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. That you say that, and
I get it though.
You know, I get it. I think a lot of people may understand where you're coming from. You know, listen, there's so much to dive into with your career. I mean, people may not even realize, Neil, like everything you've been a part of. They're gonna find out, sure enough, when we're finished with this interview. But for our listeners out there, we got a lot of listeners who. I mean, man, when you won the cup in 1994, like how long ago was that? I mean, over 20 years ago. So some of our listeners may not have even been alive back then. But when you look at your career overall, what's the one thing you would want people to know about Neil Smith?
That I wasn't just a GM who signed free agents and traded players and tried to buy my way to something. I was a scout for many, many years, and I loved recognizing young talent, and I'm probably most proud of everything I've done. I would say the thing I'm most proud of is getting Nicholas Lidstrom when nobody else knew about him and keeping it a secret and then getting him in the third round and him turning into a seven-time Norris Trophy winner. That's the real thrill to me, is when you can recognize young talent and that player person becomes a star in the league. Adam Graves is another example, but not nearly like Lidstrom, but that you see something in them that maybe others don't see, and you draft them and their character is great and they become a good player and so on. So that's, I find that really exciting, much more exciting than signing free agents and making trades and things like that.
Yeah, no, we can get into that draft, because your 1991 draft with the Red Wings, I mean, one of the best draft classes we've ever seen, if not the best draft class ever in the history of the league for one team, because in one draft you get Nick Lidstrom, you also get Sergei Fedorov. You had four players in that draft who played over 1,000 games, when you include Mike Sillinger, who was your first round pick, and then Dallas Drake, who was also in that draft. I mean, but I want to go ahead.
If Konstantinov hadn't been in the car accident, he might have been a Norris Trophy winner.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. But I want to focus on Lidstrom, though, before we get into Fedorov and some of these other guys. You said guys didn't know much about him. How did you know about Nick Lidstrom?
Well, what was great for me is that I had, and the key to being successful in anything is hiring the right people, right? You that know more than you know. And I met a guy very early in my time going over to Europe named Christer Rockström, who knew all the young players in Sweden and was still of an age where he was the same age as them. So it wasn't like he didn't have anything in common. Sometimes once you get older, you really don't have anything in common with 20-something-year-olds as far as knowing them and then getting them to tell you who the up-and-comers are. So it was Christer Rockström that got told about Nicholas Lidström by the guys playing in on his team in Västerås. And they called Christer and said, this young kid that they're bringing up from junior to the Swedish Elite League team, we can't get by him in practice. I mean, he's amazing. You should come and see him. So we waited for him to get into a game. He never got any ice time in the game. Then he went to see him in practices. And we're talking like 5-hour drive for Christer. So he told me all about him. I flew over. I ended up, talking to Nicholas. Nicholas to this day remembers it because we went to Pizza Hut.
oh, lovely.
And he it was,
don't spend too much money.
Yeah, really?
Now.
Not Red Lobster?
We didn't have any. Actually, it was really expensive there in Sweden to go to Pizza Hut. But anyway, we kept it quiet, really quiet. And Central Scouting had him rated way down low. The interesting part about the Lidström draft is Philadelphia took a player from Lidström's team, Västerås, in the 1989 draft, took him before Lidström.
Mm.
So, I mean, there's how blind people were to Lidström, is that we knew about him through Christer. And in that draft, too, to put it in perspective, you could only take 18-year-olds in the first three rounds. You couldn't take them in rounds 4 through whatever it was, 10 at the time or whatever. You could only take them in the first three rounds. So I told Jimmy Devolano, if we don't take Lidström in the third round, we're going to have to take him in the first round next year because he'll play in the World Junior and everybody will know about him. So we got him in with the third round pick. And then with the fourth round pick, of course, we got Fedorov. So
yeah.
That was it.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
who is Sergei Fedorov? The Cam and Strick podcast is brought to you by CarShield. You know, nothing more frustrating, Cam, than when that engine light comes on and you know right off the bat you're going to have to spend thousands of dollars to repair your vehicle. Call 800-857-2481. Mention the promo code CAM or visit carshield.com and use the code CAM to save 10%. Yeah. That's carshield.com. A deductible may apply. Save yourself money. Cam. Sign up and get your coverage now with CarShield.com.
Cam.
Now back to the interview. Okay, so, but Fedorov. I mean, you're telling me that nobody knew about Fedorov either? Like, did you go into the draft with his name highlighted saying, we have to get this guy? This guy is a future superstar? Or did you not know he'd be as good as he turned out to be?
Well, I don't think you ever know anybody's going to be as good as they turn out to be, or sometimes, unfortunately, as bad as they turn out to be.
Mm-hmm.
But with Fedorov, I was trying to get him the year before, and I had justified or tried to justify that he'd played in enough games to be eligible. Remember, it was rounds 1 through 3. You could only take 18-year-olds, or those were the only rounds you could take 18-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to get Fedorov in that later round, even though he was only 18 the year before. And then he played in the World Championships against Yzerman, and I think Yzerman came back raving about him to us. And I had already been saying, like, we got to try to get this guy. We got to get this guy. So when here's really an interesting thing. When we took Fedorov in the fourth round, which was the first round that you're eligible to be taken in, right? If you're not in those first three. That was the highest a Russian had ever been taken at that time.
I know, it's crazy.
It is crazy. Burry's before him, right? Burry's a late runner.
Burry got taken afterwards, and I wanted to take him too, and Jimmy wouldn't let me. He was so worried about taking too many Russians. And in the 12th round, there's a true story. Christer and I wanted to take a guy named Sergei Nemchinov, Jimmy D wanted to take Mark Allens from Windsor, a goaltender, and he wouldn't let us take this Russian guy. And so the we waited for the next year, and in New York, I took him in the 12th round that year.
My gosh, oh my! So you talk about all these guys that, you know, you drafted, you scouted, it all worked out. But is there anybody that comes to mind that you saw like, oh my God, this is a no brainer?
Can't miss.
It's a can't miss. He's big. He's strong. He does everything. And put it this way, he didn't get hurt. Is there anybody that just couldn't figure it out in the NHL that you were absolute locked on?
Yeah, well, as a scout, I mean, I made mistakes as a GM, but when you make mistakes as a GM, you really are trusting your people. And it's really them that made the mistake, but you get the discredit for it. You know what I mean? When you're a scout or the chief scout, it's all yours, you know. And in 1986, the highest the players were Joe Murphy or Jimmy Carson. That was the decision. And of course, we went with Murphy, and we were all sure because Murphy was playing at Michigan State, playing against older guys. And we thought for sure he would be just an unbelievable NHL player. And so we took him first, and Joe actually did play a lot of games in the NHL by the end of his career, but never became anything close to a star. Jimmy Carson started off as in LA and was tremendous for a couple of years, got traded to Edmonton in the Gretzky trade and sort of fizzled out after that. But I'd have to say my biggest disappointment would be Joe Murphy, number one overall, and really never found his way to be that.
Yeah, and he bounced around a bit.
Yeah, and it's got to be sad to watch where his life is now. I mean, you see these guys, you know these guys when they're innocent puppies. I mean, just trying to find their way, and you never know which direction they're going to turn in, Neil, as you've learned, obviously, through your experience.
Yeah, you don't, because you can't, no one can get inside someone's brain and know and also know what kind of an upbringing and what they're going to have in the future. I mean, Joe, unfortunately, now suffers from mental illness and is, is, as you guys know and you've read, he's homeless, unfortunately, in Canada and has some mental problems. But that's the only one I've ever known where it's gone to that extreme. I mean, the thing that you don't know, I'll give you another great example, Pavel Brendl, that we took in 1999 at fourth overall for the Rangers.
Oh, yeah, I remember
that. He'd scored 92 goals in the Western League for Calgary Hitmen. And, the Western League's thought of as the harder league to play in and all this. This guy got 92 goals. So the scouts all thought, this is the next Mike Bossy or whatever. So we took him. And it turned out that he didn't have the character makeup to ever get it right in the NHL. He played very little and ended up fizzling out.
Like what, though? Like what did he do wrong? Like so he scores 92 in the Western League where you're traveling 20 hours. It's the most hardcore league. You got tough guys everywhere. How the hell could he not transition? That's harder, way harder than playing in the NHL, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, it could be when you're that age, but I get the feeling that Pavel Brendl was a man playing amongst boys in the Western League, and then when he came to play a man against men, he didn't have the psychological strength strength to go through it like he did in the junior leagues. In junior, he just mopped up. I mean, how good he was. He didn't elevate his game to, as you well know, the difference between playing against kids that are 18 through 17, 18, 19. Now you're getting in to play against guys that are all through their 20s and early 30s that have families and that are, fighting for a paycheck.
Yeah.
It's a lot different game, and he couldn't adjust.
A lot of guys can't adjust from juniors, man. I play with a bunch of them.
I want to get into some interesting stories here that took place throughout your career. And listen, Neil, we just had Kevin Stevens on. Really open with us, talking about, the incident that took place in East St. Louis. I mean, went through the entire story, what led to him, being arrested in a hotel room in East St. Louis. But one thing that he said was that I owe Neil Smith a lot because he stayed back when the team left. He tried to get me out. He got me help. He got me away from everybody in New York. So you know, he didn't become a major distraction, didn't have to deal with people in general, specifically, I would think, the media right off the bat while he was getting help. But take us back to that night. Like, how did you find out that he was in jail? And take it from there, Neil.
Well, going back to that, game, we played in St. Louis that night. I remember Mike Richter had an unbelievable game. And we were staying overnight, and so the players were going to go out. It wasn't that often that we stayed overnight. We chartered most of the places because this was, you know, in the late 90s. And I remember seeing Kevin go out that night, and we sort of just waved, hey, you know, see you, see you later. And all of a sudden in the morning, I'm got my stuff, and we're going to go to the plane. I'm lined up to get a coffee, and in St. Louis, there's that one hotel that's in the train station. It used to be the train station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Union Station.
Union Station.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of little coffee shops and little bars and restaurants and things inside there. Anyway, I was getting a coffee, and my phone rang, and I looked at it, and it was the security guy for the St. Louis Blues. And he said, Neil, Kevin Stevens has been arrested for crack cocaine, possession of crack cocaine, and the intent to manufacture crack cocaine, and there was a prostitute there. I think he told me all that at once. Mm-hmm. And I almost fell over, to be honest with you. Like, it shook me, like, as if it was one of my kids. Like, I'd never had any trouble like this in my time as manager of the Rangers. Nothing, literally. And now, you know, Artie was a guy that we knew had had, you know, problems drinking and whatnot. And now you feel like crap, because Artie, everybody loves Kevin Stevens. If you play with Kevin Stevens, there isn't anybody that's going to say they didn't like Kevin Stevens as a teammate. So I stayed back with our travel guy, and John Muckler took the team and flew on to Atlanta, and we went over to see him in East St. Louis, and it was terrible what I saw, because here I saw the same guy with the same clothes on as the night before, but, you know, really, like, dirty and messed up, and, you know, mucus coming out of his nose, and no shoes on, and you know, crying and hitting himself in the head and saying how he screwed up and all this. And I didn't know what to do other than to try to help him and try to make him feel better or to try to ease him. I ended up calling his wife to try to put her at ease and telling her that he wasn't involved with any women, that it was just a drug issue, and which it really was.
Yeah.
And you know, there wasn't much we could do, because it was Dan from the substance abuse part of the NHL that came in and flew in to look after Kevin to get him out of there and then get him going again. Once a player gets in trouble like that, the substance abuse program sort of takes over. And so I flew from with Darren Blake from St. Louis to Atlanta. But guys, honestly, I can tell you this with no shame, I remember bawling my eyes out. Just bawling my eyes.
Oh, I bet. It's traumatic.
It was horrible. And I was like, here was a guy that you loved. Like, he was one of your teammates. I'm the manager. I'm really not a teammate, but I look at everybody as my teammates. And to see him in this condition, I honestly couldn't even talk. I was honestly hiding and crying in places, because I didn't know, you know, and you don't know what to do. And then in Atlanta, I had a team meeting and told the team about it. And then we just went on from there and tried to help him as much as we could. Some people weren't sympathetic towards it, believe it or not. I don't mean the players, but there were some other adults that weren't very sympathetic, that just were like, you know. And I was completely choked up, because I thought, you know, all I could think about was this human being whose life was maybe going to be ruined by this.
Yeah, he Yeah, no, I you know, he's an addict, and you know, he's lonely in St. Louis, and he just, and when people look at the headline on that though, then a prostitute, that he just went to the prostitute to buy the drugs, like, but then you tie it all together. But my question to you, I actually got a 2-part question, but the first part is, you said that they charged him for, would you say, manufacturing and selling too? So there's two different accounts.
Charged him with them. I guess when there's a certain amount at the scene,
okay,
the police categorize it as one thing or another. So it wasn't just what apparently happened was he met this cab driver, and when he was in the cab, he said about getting some stuff, and the cab driver took him to the place where the prostitute was, mm-hmm. and they went into a hotel room, and they were trying to shake him down. They were mm-hmm. trying to shake Kevin down, and when they somebody called the cops because of the noise in the hotel room, in this motel room. It was by a seedy little motel.
Oh, yeah.
And the cops came and raided it. And when they raided it, they found everything that was there from the two other people, the taxi driver and the prostitute. So he gets charged along with them. I'm sure they got charged too with, you know, crack cocaine and intent to manufacture. I remember the word manufacture it. Now, maybe because they had the tools that you use to heat this stuff up to do whatever you do to make crack out of cocaine and whatever it's mixed with. And maybe all those ingredients were there, and that's why he got charged with it. Because, you know, when the cops raid, they charge you with everything they can charge you with. It's not whether you did it or not. You know, they'll figure that out later.
Hey, let's talk about the new Bud Light Seltzer.
Oh, yeah.
It's an easy-drinking, hard seltzer that comes in 4 delicious fruit flavors.
Mm.
Black cherry, ooh, strawberry, yes, lemon lime, and Cam's favorite, mango.
Oh,
with
mango.
With only 100 calories, 5% alcohol, and less than a gram of sugar, mm-hmm, you might as well have a few tonight or this weekend. Mm. Go to BudLight.com to buy Bud Light Seltzer online. Must be 21 years of age or older. Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good.
Yeah.
Now back to the interview.
Yeah, guilty by association, and that's exactly right.
Exactly.
No, you got to. So crack's cheaper, so you mix it with baking soda and you heat it up, whatever the case is. But yeah, he just was in a weird jam, and he was looking for it because he's an addict. But how did you? Okay, so this all goes down. What do you do with the team? The team's freaking out. How do you deal with that? Do you walk in, sit everybody down? What do you say to them? What'd you do?
Well, I say it's interesting because Matthew Schneider, remember him telling me that he couldn't, you know, the empathy that I had, he was really, you know, moved by it. Mm. I just sat everybody down in the room, and we had people like Brian Leach was good. Remember, Brian is played in that Boston area, and Kevin's from Boston, and they had we had other people who had known Kevin Hardy as he's for a long time, and I just sat everybody down in the room and told them, you know, our friend, this is what's happened to him, this is where he is, this is what he's charged with, and I know I was crying telling them. I know I wasn't, you know, completely losing it, but I know I could barely hold it together. Mm. Again, because it's such a sad situation when you see that happen. You know, it honestly is like you two guys right now looking at each other, and then you say, okay, see you later, and then you get a call a few hours from now, and the other guy is in jail, dirty, filthy, being charged with all these different things, and you're like, what the hell happened?
Right.
Like, what's going on? And now this guy's in big time trouble, and he's your buddy. Like, he's right. Like, how could this happen?
Yeah.
And so I sort of explained that to the team, that this is what had happened, and we just gotta, you know, do what we can do for him. We'll be supportive. We'll be there for him. And they needed to know the truth about the whole situation. And so I had to do that. I had to tell them that. And we went on. We didn't make judgments or anything like that about Kevin. We just, we all knew that he had a problem. And I think in some ways, we all felt responsible for him having been out that night.
Mm.
And even me, like, there's nothing the GM's going to do when the players are going out. But even I said, like, if I could have just stopped him when I saw him leaving the hotel. But that's ridiculous. How do you stop a player from going out? You can't.
No.
But you wish you had somehow.
Well, he's a grown man. But that was my question for you before we move on. Were you aware of any issues that he had, any substance abuse issues? Like, was this widely known prior to him being arrested that night?
No, not substance. I was very naive to substances. Honestly, I was. People ask me now, were your any, you know, 11 years as the manager of the Rangers, was any of your players ever doing drugs? And I was like, I know, not that I know of. Like, I didn't think they did any. Like, you know, it wasn't in my wheelhouse, in my world. I didn't think that way. I was more worried about them drinking too much or, you know, doing things like that. The cocaine and other drugs or recreational drugs, I never really thought about them and didn't. I may not have recognized them if I'd seen them, to be honest with you. So I didn't know that he was struggling from that. I knew there was definitely an alcohol problem, and I'd heard there was a gambling problem. But, you know, as long as we could keep him in front of us, you know, and he was said that he was sober, so I figured he wasn't drinking anymore. So, no, that's honestly as much as I knew. And that team, I'm not sure if it was that 99-2000, because
yeah,
if it was.
So. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, well, that team also had Theo Fleury on it.
Yeah, man. Oh, wow, yeah. We had him on.
And we signed Theo Fleury in the summer. And again, naive, I think stupid of me. I didn't know that Theo had been into drugs. I knew that he'd, you know, I knew some stuff, but I didn't know that anything about drugs. And so if we had Todd Harvey on that team. So there was, you know, Kevin Stevens, Theo Fleury, and Todd Harvey, who wasn't to that level, but I know he'd had some issues. You know, it wasn't good. And, you know, you've got John Muckler as a coach who's really not, you know, is older and probably wasn't recognizing things the way that maybe a younger coach would. We just didn't know. But the thing about Kevin Stevens is, I'm repeating myself from what I said earlier, is that the heartbreaking part about it was that anybody that knows Kevin Stevens or has played with Kevin Stevens loves Kevin Stevens. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy. He's one of the best team guys. Have you guys seen the it's on YouTube if you haven't seen it.
Yeah,
the Brian Bellows thing.
God, yeah. Jesus Christ. I didn't know where you're going with that. Well, hell yeah, we saw that.
I thought you were
going
to say the documentary.
I know.
But yeah, we saw that. Yeah. Actually, Cam showed me. For some reason, I had never seen it. It's
probably not great for today's time.
It's not great for 2020.
For 2020, but goddamn, was that funny. But that was in the playoffs, too. Bellows, you
I can't
pussy.
Believe even back then that they were recording guys. They had mic on the bench.
Trotty was on there, too.
Yeah, that was the final, and Trotz was sitting beside Kevin, and Brian Bellows had just sort of drawn a penalty on Pittsburgh. They were in the final. Mm-hmm. That was Kevin, and that's the way he was. He was really had a quick wit and quick. He was very quick, and Trotz is sitting beside him, like chirps in like, yeah, that's right,
you know, fucker.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah,
that's the best clip ever. I mean, although not for 2020. Listen, get that. Everybody knows that.
Listen, Cam, I know you want to move on to something else, but I got to ask you this, though, because you said Theo Fleury was on the team, and he was kind of going crazy that year on the ice with some antics and stuff. I mean, and you honestly, you had no idea. He was on with us. He's telling us stories about
$50 million.
You know, what he was doing after practice, not sleeping, showing up to the rink the next day, how much money he was blowing through. Yeah. And living in New York, why, you know, it was just a terrible mix for Theo Fleury to be in New York City. You had no idea. Nobody came to you and said, hey, man, something's not right with Theo?
No, honestly, I had not that I didn't have any idea that Theo could be, some kind of problem. And he wasn't having a good year with us, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know about drugs or anything like that. I honestly didn't. I didn't know anything. No one came to me. The trainers didn't come to me. The assistant coaches didn't come to me. Nobody, the players didn't come to me. Nobody came and said, you know, you've got to get Fleury into some kind of program, or else I would have done that. But that didn't happen. So, you know, again, if I was looking back at it, I'd say, like, Neil, how could you not know? But I can honestly say I didn't. So, no. You know, times change, and I guess in today's world I might know, but in today's hockey, gosh, from what I hear, they don't even go out at night anymore, let alone strung out.
Neil, let me tell you something, though. I did the same thing. When you're an addict, you hide it, man. You're a professional hider. You hide it from your parents. You hide it from your wife. You do. And so you just get it. You get used to doing that. And just guys keep it to themselves, and it's crazy. And I wanted to go back to, and you dealt with somebody else as well, not, I guess, that long, but with Bob Probert back in Anaheim. Uh-huh. And did you, I mean, this guy, first off, what'd you think of him as a player, as a person, as a tough guy? And then did you notice anything with him either? Because he was pretty wild at that time as well.
Right. Well, with Bobby, let me give you my history with Bobby. We drafted him in 1983. That was a Steve Yzerman draft.
Oh, God.
And he was on Brantford. And I had to go and see, and we had another player on there, the goalie named Chris Pusey. And I had to, you know, as being one of the scout, I had to go in and talk to the guys afterwards and all that. So I knew Bobby from the time he was in junior. And then he came up, and his skating, if you remember, wasn't great. But then he adapted his skating, you know, as his career went on, he adapted to get good enough and quick enough that he had really good hands to play in the NHL. And then he played with Yzerman, and that makes it a lot easier. But Bobby, you know, again, his dad was a cop in Windsor. I think his dad had some problems with alcohol. We knew Bobby had some problems with alcohol, but to what extent, I don't think we really knew. And again, in that position, I'm the chief scout, so I'm traveling all the time. At training camp, the 1 year, I had to take Peter Klima and Bobby down to Adirondack, because I was the general manager of Adirondack, so I had to take them down there, and because they were both caught drinking. And then there was that year I was with Colin Campbell when we caught all those guys at Goose Loonies in the playoffs against
that's
Edmonton
a funny name, though. I'm sorry.
Goose Loonies.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Neil. Well, I got to laugh at that one.
Hey, what happens at Goose Loonies stays at Goose Loonies, Neil. You know that.
Dime pieces everywhere.
These guys, they were all out that night. And so then Jacques Demers ends up telling our beat writer at breakfast the next day, of the game, I can't believe Proby was out that night. So, you know, Proby had obviously addiction issues with alcohol and drugs and everything else in between. I also knew Bob post-career, so I knew him through the Detroit part. Then he went on, you know, played in Chicago and that. And then when his career was over, I played hockey with him, actually at a tournament in Vegas. And so I got to know Bob. You know, I mean, I got to hang around with him a little bit there. He was pretty cleaned up by that point. He had his family and all that stuff. But as far as a hockey player, he was certainly a throwback, because you could never call Proby a goon. Proby was a real good player that, like, he could do everything.
Who
right?
killed
he
could, people.
Yeah, he, yeah, he'll cross-check in the face. Scary. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, no. And, I mean, you fought Bob Probert, like, he could really hurt you. Like, this was not, you weren't just fighting he had no fear. So, you know, and we had him and Joey Koser. And Joey, of course, could knock you out if he caught you with one of those roundhouses. Oh. But he didn't win every single fight, because if you got his arm, you know, you fell down or whatever. Proby, he could just go. And so, he was a very special player and a special person, and really a teddy bear of a guy when you knew him.
Cam and Strick podcast here for our boy Dan Bellman with Bellman.com.
Yeah, baby.
You need some new wheels? Why not get a Cadillac, a Buick, a GMC? Yeah. Head out to Troy today. And again, don't forget about Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram right across the street.
No doubt.
Right there in Troy, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Visit them online. Check out their new selection, the pre-owned selection, the best service you will find anywhere in the country. Bellman.com. Bellman.com. tyrewhite.com. Get yourself some new wheels in time for the summer.
Yeah.
Now back to the interview. Yeah, no,
his
documentary was powerful, man. I can't believe they got that much footage.
I know.
On tape, man, before he passed away. So, for those of us who never met Bob Probert, you can certainly check that out. I'm asking you about all these guys that we had on the podcast because I'm just interested your side of things in terms of how you tell the story. But all right, so Mike Keenan, he wins the Stanley Cup with you in 1994. I would think that he's on top of the world, much like you were, considering how long it had been since the New York Rangers had won the Cup. The city's going crazy. It's great for the NHL. And all of a sudden, he finds himself in St. Louis. How did it get to that point? What was your relationship like with Iron Mike?
Well, I hired Mike, as you know, in April of 93, after we'd had a disastrous 92-93 season. And I could tell right from the get-go this was going to be a hard guy to work with. He's very difficult, very insubordinate. And that went on all year. But he was the type of coach we needed to keep the players on edge because we had a really talented group, and they could eat up a coach if he wasn't strong enough. And what happened at the end was Mike had decided that he could cash in on this great season we'd had with the Rangers. We were probably, as the playoffs went on, especially after the New Jersey series, you knew we were going to probably win, or it looked that way. We'd won the President's Trophy, and I think he wanted to be the manager and coach. And I think maybe when he went to New York, he thought he could end up with my job. I don't know that for a fact, but he might have thought that. So he was negotiating with Detroit to go there. In Detroit. And then when they backed away, his agent, Rob Campbell, went immediately to St. Louis, and they made the deal in St. Louis for him to go there before we'd even finished the playoffs. Now, that all came out later, but that's what happened. I mean, Mike wanted to go and cash in on the success that he'd had. He's made up since then. A lot of different reasons why he had to leave that are not true at all. Saying things like, well, Stanley Jaffe was gone and he's the one that hired me. Well, that's not true. Stanley Jaffe didn't even know who Mike Keenan was until I introduced him to him after he was hired as a coach. So there was a lot of BS going around after that. And but the truth of the matter is, Mike got a huge contract from St. Louis. He became the GM coach, and he got what he wanted.
That's so crazy that GM you say coach. The deal with St. Louis was done before you guys even finished the playoffs, before you guys even lifted the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's insane to me that he could be focused on trying to get another deal done in the midst of a playoffs with a team that had a chance to win it all. Like you said, you were President's Trophy winners. But you said he was insubordinate. He was only there for 1 year. Like, give me an example of what he would do that was insubordinate.
Okay, well, we played, for example, in London. We started the exhibition season in London, England, against the Toronto Maple Leafs. We had a two or three game exhibition series there. So we all flew over commercial to London. And after the series was over, after the games were over, and we were flying back, and my wife was on the plane, and I said to her, I can't believe Keenan hasn't come over so that we could talk about the players. I better go talk to him. I said, so I'll go over and talk to Keenan about the players, which is what you should be doing during training camp, right? Mm-hmm. Discussing who's playing well, who's not. I go to find him, and I run into somebody. I go I think it was our travel guy. I go, hey, where's Mike sitting? He says, oh, Mike's not on the plane. I said, what? No, Mike flew right to Chicago to see his daughter. Because remember, he had just come from Chicago when he came to mm-hmm. the Rangers. Yeah. He'd never told me he was going to do that, nothing. Just took off and left and went to Chicago. Of course, we're paying for it. So there was that, and there was all kinds of stuff after that. Like, I would say to him, when training camp was going to start, Mike, do you want me to be there when we have the speech? And he says, I don't give a shit if you're there or not, Neil.
I say it to Andy all the time, but
then I find out that from the trainer, this is long after it's all over. I mean, years after, Dave Smith told me, he says, Neil, you know, you'd call up to ride, ask for Mike all the time. And you know how hard it was when I'd get off the phone, I'd say, Mike, Neil wants to talk to you. And he'd say, oh, tell him I'm not here. And he was lying right on the training table right in front of me. So he'd, you know, he'd show the staff that he was just that he was like disrespectful. So what is the staff going to think? That's just the way he operated all the time. He'd ream out people from a Zamboni driver to a trainer to a TV producer to all kinds of people that would, you know, he would ream out from time to time. It was embarrassing, you know, all these little people. So he was a very tough guy to handle when you're the GM. And that's obvious when you look at his career and what happened within his career, that he was a really, really tough guy to handle.
Gosh almighty. Well, okay, so we had Gino Ojek on, and he talked about Mark Messier, and we all know what happened throughout that whole final, especially against the Devils, and Mark Messier guaranteeing a victory, gets a hat trick, this, that, and the other, but he wins you a cup. How was the falling out? What happened with Mark Messier? Again, when I bring up Gino Ojek, he said that when he went into Vancouver, like, he wouldn't get off the ice, and the coach couldn't do anything about it.
He would just jump on the boards.
Like, jump on the, you know, you got six Stanley Cups, you're doing what you want. Like, how was that exit with Mark Messier?
Well, what happened was in 1996, we signed Gretz in the summer, and Gretz played with Mess in 96-97, and we went to the conference final against Philadelphia. We got knocked out by Philadelphia, and in that series it was pretty, and in throughout the playoffs, I mean, Gretz had really played, we felt, better than Mark in the playoffs, and Mark, it was, you know, pretty well manhandled by a young kid by the name of Lindros at that time. And when I went to see my bosses, which is what you do when you're spending big money, and Gretz was on a contract of $4 million or something, or $4.5 million back at that time. And I went to see Doug, who's Mark's dad, who was his agent, which was tough to deal with that. And I went to see him, and my owners, which were at the time ITT, said, you can't give Messier any more than you give Gretzky, and it should only be 1 year. And I was like, well, they're going to tell me to, you know, frig off. They're never going to do
that. Watch your language, Neil.
Whoa. Come on now, Neil. We're professionals around here.
So anyways, I go up to Hilton Head and I told Doug, here's what we're offering. And basically he told me, you know, screw you. So now we go back and forth a few times, but we can't. You know, we can't get him to where he wants to be, which is like $6.5 million a year, way above Gretz and for a number of years. So it ends up that the guy in Vancouver, which was named, his name was McCaw, the owner, the year before had missed out on Gretzky. He wanted to sign Gretzky. Pat Quinn didn't get it done. I got Gretzky signed. And so McCaw told Pat Quinn, and I got this right from Pat Quinn, you sign Messier no matter what it takes. Signs Messier to us, I think it was a 6-year deal at $6 million a year. And, you know, it's like Messier's really mad. He didn't want to leave New York, but so he's mad. Who's he going to be mad at? He's mad at me because he didn't get what he wanted. Yet I couldn't do what he wanted, even if I thought I should, because my owner wouldn't let me do what I wanted. Like, he told me, here's all you can spend. There was no salary cap back then, but there was obviously an owner. And, So that's where I was left, and Mess sort of torched me on the way out of town, and went to Vancouver. But things didn't obviously go very well for him in Vancouver, and things didn't end up going very well for us back in New York either.
No, that was a marriage that was made for one another. Yeah. Messier in New York, it's sad to see that end.
It worked out, though.
What about the offer sheet, though, when you signed Joe Sakic to an offer sheet? What was it, a 3-year deal, $7 million per year, 3-year deal? And how you structured the offer sheet where Colorado had to pay, what, $15 million up front in signing bonus money? So you thought the deal would get done when you structure it like that. Were you shocked, or did you expect Colorado to match?
Well, I expected them to match. And I'll tell you the whole story on that one. Here was the thing. When we lost Missy and we were getting torched in town, again, go back to ITT, and there's three guys that are restricted free agents that are stars. Paul Kariya, Joe Sakic, and it escapes me what the third name was. And Dave Checkett said to me, let's sign Sakic because the guy that owns the Nuggets and the Avalanche, mm-hmm. and his name escapes me right now.
It wasn't Kronky then. For people who are thinking it's Kronky, it wasn't Kronky back then.
St. Louis people.
No.
Yeah, now it is. It wasn't back then. Yeah.
This individual sold it to Kronky. And Dave says to me, Dave Checkets, who's the president of Madison Square Garden, yeah. I know from being in all the board meetings in the NBA that the Nuggets are almost out of money. They don't have any money. They won't have money to match. I guarantee you they're not going to match. And I said to him, and I swear to you on the Bible, I said, Dave, they have to match. They have no choice but to match. If we do this, they will match. Because this is their franchise player, and they're not going to they can't let him go. So, but, you know, I'm doing what I'm told, and I'm going along with that team player. So we sign Sakic, and sure enough, they find a way to get the money to match. And now there's no upside to doing it, because all that happens is the rest of the league hates your guts, and you didn't get the player. And you know, you've increased salaries around the league now. Mm-hmm. I know the whole drill of what I was told after this.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't turn around and throw Dave Checkets and the owners under the bus and say, "Hey, it's not me." So you got to take the crap. You just have to. And that was the story on that. And it was I'll give you the epilogue to it. The epilogue, which is amazing, is so after they matched, I remember Bob Bowman, who was the guy with ITT, he ended up going to MLB BAM, mm-hmm. After that, saying, let's do the same thing now with Kariya. Let's take it to Eisner on Kariya. Remember Eisner ran Disney,
right? Yeah.
Yep.
Right? And I said, if you want to do that, you better fire me, because I said, I got to live in the NHL. I live here. I'm not just in and out for like fun. I can't do this crap. You know, they're not going to, my name's going to be mud if we do this. I'm not doing it. So we didn't do it. But that's what they wanted to do.
Andy Strickland and Cam Jansen here for you for GadgetBuyback.com. Yeah. Gadget Lab, they got a store here locally if you're in St. Louis, 5541 Telegraph Road. Here's the deal. You got an old phone, maybe a cracked tablet. Maybe it's perfect, but it's a little bit older.
Mm.
Turn it in right now. www.GadgetBuyback.com. Upgrade your devices, phones, computers, watches.
Anything.
Doesn't have to be Apple either.
No.
Get those tablets turned in. Again, www.gadgetbuyback.com, 877-772-8880. Now back to the interview.
Yeah.
Wow, so you didn't do it. You know, Dave Checkets, especially for our St. Louis listeners,
yeah.
I mean, they're like, wow, okay, Dave Checkets, the same guy who ran the Blues. Mm. I remember him telling me when he was here, you know, talking about the Rangers. Well, the players there, they all just played for a paycheck. They played as individuals. Like, well, how much responsibility does he deserve for a lot of those paychecks that were handed out and salaries that Ranger players were making? And what did you think of Dave as a whole working with him, Neil?
Well, I actually liked working with Dave when, for what I knew of Dave, I liked working with him. And then there were some things that happened after I found out things after I left that didn't add up to what he had told me when he was there. So, for example, when we went and signed Theo Fleury and Kirk McLean and Stephen Lefebvre and Kaminsky and all those guys that summer. Remember that? It's the summer of 99.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was Dave that was on the plane with me. We took a private plane and went, started off in Winnipeg with Don Baisley and Steele Fleury. Flew after that to LA and talked to Pat Brisson about Stephane Quintel and went around and did, like, he was the one that was signing these guys. Basically, I was there, obviously, and hoping these guys would turn out. But you know, when it all looked bad, it, of course, it all comes back to the manager again. And the other thing about Dave that I didn't like was that when on the day that he told me, you know, we're going to let you go, he told me that that was Dolan's idea, that Dolan wanted to clean house, and that if he ever got his own team, he'd want me with him in a minute, and that this and this and this and this. So I said, okay, well, I guess my time is up here anyway. You know, and I moved on. Well, then Dave tells a friend of mine a few years later, it really wasn't Dolan that wanted Neil fired. I made that decision. I just thought it was time for new leadership at the Rangers. And I'm like, what? And then when he goes to St. Louis, of course you think, well, you know, I got a good chance to go to St. Louis with him. Larry Plow was the GM, who was my friend.
Yeah.
If he was going to look for to bring a hockey guy with him, I thought for sure, you know, I'd be the guy that he would bring with him. We'd had a great run together, including me giving him a Stanley Cup ring when he was the president of the Knicks and he wasn't my boss. And yet he tells somebody, oh, how would it look if I brought Neil here after I'd fired him in New York? That wouldn't look good. And I'm like, what? So it's all, you know, and I didn't really respect the lying, and he did a lot of lying.
Well, it was pretty much set up that John Davidson was going to leave New York and come with him. And I remember talking to you a lot back then, Neil, you know, when they were in the process of buying the team and all that stuff was going down. But were you involved with another group? I mean, I know you were eyeing St. Louis at one point, or was it specifically with Dave?
Well, I was with there was a fellow named Andrew Murstein, who now owns Richard Petty Motorsports, actually out of New York. And he had been looking at the Blues, to buy the Blues. And I had been helping him. So at the same time when Checkett's group bought it, we were looking at it as well. So, yeah, that is true. And then the thing with John Davidson that I think happened was, and John's a good friend, but I think that Mike McCarthy, who was had been the president of MSG Network, was very close with John Davidson, and he was a partner with Dave in purchasing the Blues.
Correct.
And yeah. I think that's what I don't think Dave would have known to reach out and got John. I think it was Kevin McCarthy who was the one who wanted to have John there, and Dave and Ken Munoz went along with it.
Right. Yeah, because they were all working together.
A lot of drama in your life, Neil.
It was Neil. I mean, and that drama.
Yeah, that's New York.
Well, it continued here in St. Louis, man. It was an interesting time, without a doubt. You know, just covering, you know, that regime, and you know, a lot of good and bad. You know, it wasn't just all bad, but you know, it was interesting to say the least. Just dealing with all of those people individually who you're talking about. All right, a couple more things I want to get to before we let you go, Neil. And it's been great stuff, man.
We
appreciate you having with us, sticking around with us. But all right, the Eric Lindros situation. We all know that the Rangers had a deal. We had Lindros on the podcast too. Yeah. He kind of talked about this, and you know, of course, when he didn't sign with Quebec and had a disagreement there with the owner, didn't want to play for the owner. So I know you guys made an offer. Philadelphia made an offer. Arbitrator makes a decision. He eventually lands in Philadelphia. But what was the Rangers' offer? What was your offer, and how much cash was involved?
Well, here's how it went. It was they had a suite in Montreal, Pierre Paget suite in Montreal the night before the draft, and they would take individual managers would come up and see them on that floor and go away. So I was up there talking to Pierre quite a bit that night. I never went to sleep that whole night. And our offer was something like, and I don't have it memorized completely, but it was something like Kovalev, Waite, I think Amonte, and it was James Patrick, I believe, and $12 million.
Wow.
And the reason it was $12 million was because the Flyers were offering $15 million.
Did you know
and
that? Did you know that?
Well, that's what I found out.
Okay.
And 15 present day value on 12 was 15 over the length of time that the Flyers were going to pay it to them. So we brought it forward and paid it all at once. And they liked our players better than they liked the players at Philly. I guess this is what I found out later, because at the time you don't know Philly's involved. Mm-hmm. So I go to bed that night, or didn't go to bed that night, but went to the draft the next day thinking we've made the deal, because Pierre basically tells me we've made the deal. And so did and Stanley Jaffe.
You can answer that. Do your thing, man. We'll listen to
it. Is that Messier?
We'll have it recorded.
Is that Messier?
Is that Keenan?
Is that Keenan calling? Or is it Checkers?
No, neither one. Yeah, yeah. Get ready to give it to me. So I went. I thought that when we got to draft. When I got there, Jay Snyder said to me, "Don't announce your deal." I said, "What deal?" He says, "The Lindros deal." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "We're going to put in a grievance because we think we had the deal." And I was like, "I don't give a crap if you got the deal or not." Like, at the time I was sort of irritable because we really didn't know. So then you go through the whole day, and then we ended up going to arbitration, because what was said was this, exactly this, and this is where some people get it wrong. The Flyers were saying they had made a deal with Quebec. Quebec was saying, no, we hadn't made a deal with the Flyers. Therefore, we want to make the deal with the Rangers. The Rangers said, if you can find out that Quebec agreed to make a deal with Philadelphia before they made a deal with us, then we think Philadelphia should get the deal, because that's the way it should work. It shouldn't be double, you know, you shouldn't double cross like that. So the arbitration was between Quebec and Philly, Quebec saying they hadn't made a deal, and Philly saying they had made a deal. And we were basically onlookers, although we were involved in the whole arbitration. So at the end of that, when they made the decision on it, was Larry Bertuzzi, the uncle of the Bertuzzi that played in the NHL, the first Bertuzzi on Vancouver and that. Mm-hmm. So when he made the decision, he made the decision that they had made a trade based upon that at that time, what constituted a trade. Like, there was the basic handshake, although there wasn't physically a handshake, but there was one based upon the information that he got in. So so we were basically out of it. They had made the trade with Philly, and the trade stood. And that's what started the whole trade conference call thing that we have now, and both teams have to call in and agree this is what we've traded and so on. Before that, we didn't have that. It was just one team would call it in. So that's how that went down.
Jeez Louise. Real quick.
You should write a book.
You need to write a book. Would you have won the Cup in 94 with Lindros if he's traded all those guys away, you think?
Here's the thing. I've said this before. First of all, I'm happy what ended up happening, what history really is now. We got one Stanley Cup. They've only had four in their history, and in all these years since 1926, they've only had four, and only one since 1940, and that's 1994. So I'm thrilled that we could get one. Would we have won more if we had Lindros? Maybe. Maybe we would have won two or three, maybe. But maybe we would have won none, because without Kovalev, especially,
yeah.
And without the assets that you got, Tikkanen for Doug Weight, you have no Tikkanen, you have no Kovalev, and you can go through it like that. Would you have won the Cup in '94? You can't be so sure. You know that you would have won the Cup in '94, but maybe one could argue, yeah, but with Lindros, you could have won two or three. Well, the reality is, and the only thing that you can actually bet on, is that we would win in 94, because we did.
Yep.
So having said that, I'm happy with the way it turned out.
You would have a lot of drama one way or the other, I'll tell you that.
Well, I got more for you. 2006, the New York Islanders, people may not even remember this, that you get hired as the GM, and a month later, you're no longer the GM, you get fired. Charles Wong, I believe the late Charles Wong, if I'm not mistaken. What the hell happened there, Neil?
Well, that's another one. Well, what happened there was I was working on what the previous name for Versus Network was OLN, the first year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that was the year after the lockout. And the final was between Edmonton and Carolina. And I'm in Carolina, and I'd been interviewed by Wong a couple of times, and he calls me and offers me the job in Carolina. And he says to me, Ted Nolan's going to be the coach. And I go, what? He says, yeah, Ted Nolan's going to be the coach. Well, I should have known right then, don't take this job. Mm-hmm. But here's the stupidity of Neil. I'm like a real historic, history-loving, traditional-loving guy. I started with the Islanders in 1982. Bill Torrey was one of my mentors. The Nassau Coliseum, I was there for three of their Stanley Cups. I mean, it was all – and I could go back and prove to the Rangers that they were wrong, that they shouldn't have ever let me go. So all this was playing into it like it would in a sort of like in a – you know, in the fantasy that you have when you're in the National Hockey League. And so I took the job thinking, well, I can deal with anything because look what I dealt with in New York, right? So now I go in, and right from the first day I knew this was a big mistake on my part, because Wong wants to have himself. He wants to have Patty LaFontaine, Mike Milbury, Brian Trottier, Ted Nolan, all in the room while we're discussing who to draft, who to sign as a free agent, who to do all this stuff with. And I'm only one of the people in there. I'm not the decision maker. I'm one of the people. We're all going to make the decisions together. So, you know, I got into the I got into the draft. I did the draft for them. It was me that wanted Oposo. And we picked up Oposo. I traded for several extra picks that year. If you go back and look, I think we had 13 picks in that draft. And I think we had four guys ended up making the NHL for some period of time or another, not necessarily like Andrew, the defenseman, played in Philly as well. Andrew, anyways, you can look it up. He ended up being a solid NHL defenseman along with Oposo, and then there was a couple others. So I did the draft. Free agency came. I signed Sillinger. I signed Chris Simon. I signed the defenseman number three that had played for the Rangers. Anyways, I played in Washington and played with the Rangers. His name escapes me. Pardon me?
Andy should know all this, by the way.
Yeah. No, it was Tom. Oh, somebody.
Number three, Tom.
Tom, he was a tall guy.
And come on, Andy.
People thought he was soft. Okay. People thought, but he had a great slap shot.
Was it Cam?
Okay. No, it was Tom.
Settle down, Andy. Jesus Christ.
Anyway.
He's chirping me.
So then, lo and behold, Islanders did make the playoffs that year. That was the only year. But with me, I said to him after, I was there like 40 days, and it was getting worse and worse and worse, and I couldn't do it. And he comes in one day and says, well, you're going to resign. I said, I'm not resigning. What do you mean resign? Because I thought if you resign, no money.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Mm-hmm. So he says, well, then I said, no, you're going to have to fire me. I'm not resigning. So that's what happened. He ended up doing that. We end up going to arbitration. I got screwed. I got very little out of the arbitration.
Really?
And I moved on. But it didn't. I'm glad I didn't stay there, because I would never have wanted. I think that me being looked at as, you remember how bad the Islanders were under Wong. I didn't ever want to be part of that and ruin the reputation that I built up with the Rangers.
And Pat LaFontaine, he quit too, didn't he? Pat?
He quit the same day. Yeah, he quit that day. Yeah.
I think, by the way, it was Andrew McDonald who you're talking about and Tom Pody.
Tom Pody, yes,
exactly
number three.
Right.
Tom Pody. Yes. He had a 10-2.
Yes.
He had a 10-2.
Andrew McDonald. That's exactly right.
But imagine being a GM, though, like going into a meeting, you're like, okay, I'm in control. Oh, wait, never mind. The owner's here. Oh, okay, the boss is here. Wait, then somebody beneath me is here, and then another guy beneath me, another guy. And then we all have to make the same way. That must have been, horribly frustrating.
Did he want Gar Snow to be the GM? Like, did you know that?
The ex-GM's there. The guy that I'd replaced, Mike Milbury, he was in the meetings.
Milbury. What was he saying? He was like, no, I don't like that. No.
No, so we get into the arbitration, and he steps up on Wong's behalf, and like lambasted me in front of Bettman, saying that I had no work ethic. I was like immature. I never did any work. He never liked me. He told what was Wong's first name again? Charles. He told Charles, anybody but Neil. Don't hire Neil. Anybody but him. Neil knows I don't like him. And I'm sitting there like I'm almost falling off my chair. This guy had talked to me the whole time I was with in the Islanders. I didn't know that he hated me.
This is so, Milbury?
This is Milbury.
Well, he doesn't do that now, does he?
No, well, now he's not saying much right now.
God, that's got to be god-awful. But
he will, by the way. He will, by sources say he's not getting fired by NBC.
Somebody will pick him up,
yeah. Sure. No, he'll be back with NBC.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You think so? Because they didn't bring Jeremy Roenick back.
From what I hear, unless like the pressure all of a sudden when people find out that he's coming back is like, you know, too overwhelming for them to do it, the plan is to bring him back, from what I hear.
Wow. Jeez,
why didn't they bring Roenick back?
With the Catherine Tappan thing,
From what I understand, I think they were trying to find ways to get rid of Roenick anyway.
And Don Cherry.
I'm talking about Roenick with NBC.
I'm just saying the overall view of everything. Yeah. Go ahead.
So then when he made the comments, I think that was another option they had to try to push him away, which they did.
Sad part about those comments? I work with Catherine Tappan, and she's the nicest person and one of the hardest working people you ever work with. And when you're with Catherine Tappan, and I know we can all joke and stuff about pretty girls and all that, mm-hmm. when you're with Catherine Tappan, there's nothing but work ethic. There's no nothing. So to say that stuff that made her look, put her in a different light was really not only not fair, but it's really just not true. That's not who she is. Mm-hmm. She's a very hardworking, diligent. She knows her stuff. So it's too bad that happened.
Wow. Yeah. Neil, you have 2 more hours?
Yeah, Neil, you want to stay on? I hear the dog barking. He's probably hungry. Yeah.
I've got another question or 10 for you.
Yeah, no, man. You've been great, right, Neil. Dude, you've been absolutely
What's
great.
What's next for you? Like, what are you doing? You're doing the financial stuff, but... You want to sponsor the podcast?
You want to hang out with us?
I'll come on. No, I obviously I'd like to be back in, but guys, you know what the problem is that people think that when you haven't been in the chair for a while, that your brain has turned to mush or something, and that you really don't know, and that you couldn't do it now, and there's a new shiny coin in the. Now and they're going to reach in and get that, and so it's like unfortunately I had a big gap there where I wasn't running a team considered at all anymore by the teams. And
You think you got blackballed?
No, I don't think so. I think there was just gap in time, and timing's everything. And I think the timing didn't happen. I don't think anybody spoke. I mean, yes, there are people around the league that speak ill of me because they don't like me. I mean, I just mentioned one in Milbury, but I don't think the blackballing would be like when if somebody calls them, what do you think of Neil Smith? They said, no, don't hire him. Whatever you do, don't hire him. Or let's say the league was saying, don't hire him. And I don't believe that ever happened, because there's really no reason for it to happen. And I didn't do anything last time I checked. I mean, I don't have any felonies.
No, so, but let me ask you this, though. You went and worked with Doug Armstrong. People don't remember that. Assistant GM with the Dallas Stars, working next to Doug Armstrong. What were your impressions of him as a relatively young GM, and then now to see him go on to have the success he's had?
I've always liked Doug, but I'm prejudiced because I was friends with Neil, his dad. Ah. Neil was an older, the elder statesman for me scouting when I was scouting for Detroit.
Land on
the
moon.
He was really nice to me. He was, man on the moon. He was number 8, the linesman. I remember him so well doing games. And anyway, and so Doug, I had a fondness for right away. And Doug is a very respectful guy, as you know. And so we always got along really well. And I called him and called Kevin McDonald and called Ray Berville, a good friend of mine, when St. Louis won. And I couldn't have been happier to see that they had won, because I know what it's like when you haven't won for a long time. And, you know, I was with the Rangers, and the Blues came in 67, and they were the only team from that expansion, those 6 teams, that hadn't won yet. and it seems like you're never going to win. Like, you literally think you will never win.
Yep.
So to have the Blues win it was terrific as far as I was concerned. And I was really happy for Army, and I was happy for Kevin, and I'm really happy for Ray Brilli, because I really like Ray. It's just a good thing. It's a good thing that the Blues have gotten a Stanley Cup. I think it's good for the league.
Yeah.
It's good for the city.
Thanks for calling me Neil, by the way. Okay.
Yeah. Was he supposed to call you, Andy? Told you, stop it. Don't listen to him.
You should have called Cam. Cam celebrated more than
I celebrated more than the players. I had the cup more than the players did for some reason. I'm from St. Louis. That's why.
Yeah. So, listen, Neil, thank you very much. Man. All the best to you. Go feed your dog.
Yeah.
And who was calling, by the way? Anybody important?
Yeah.
No, nobody important. Oh, okay. Probably, another. Just another fan,
Another podcast for you to do. All right, Neil, you're the man. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming
on. Anytime, guys. Yep. It's really enjoyable. Take care.
Okay. Awesome. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Neil Smith, man. Really enjoyed talking to him. Again, a Stanley Cup winner, and he's been through a lot. The whole thing with Milbury, like all of a sudden when you think the interview couldn't take another turn.
Yeah, I know.
We're talking about Mike Milbury and his time during the New York Islanders. He gets hired as a GM and then gets fired like a month later. Crazy times, dude.
Fucking negotiate his own shit in there. It's amazing.
Lou gets there, and now all of a sudden they're like contenders. And Barry Trotz, another great dude.
Funny how that works.
They had some real issues there for a long time.
No shit, they did.
On the island.
How are those draft picks and signings doing?
I'll tell you who doesn't have issues. Or actually, I should say this. You have issues if you don't have CarShield and CarShield.com. You're going to have issues. I mean, you're going to have big-time issues.
I had issues, Andy.
Yeah.
And they fixed it in 2 seconds. Easy peasy, baby.
800-857-2481, CarShield.com. Mention the promo code CAM. You're going to save 10%. Make sure you have your protection. You never know when that air conditioning, when that heat's going to go out. You never know when that computer's going to go out.
Nope. Or
save yourself thousands of dollars. No long-term commitments. Small monthly fee. You don't pay a lot of money, but you'll save a lot of money. 800-857-2481, baby. CarShield.com. Mention the promo code CAM. You're going to save 10%. How about GadgetBuyback.com? Get that phone fixed. Don't be walking around with a cracked phone, a cracked tablet. Nobody's going to take you serious. 877-772-8880. GadgetBuyback.com. If you're in the St. Louis area, breaking news. We're going to have some new locations popping up very soon. They have one right now in Oakville. Take it in. They'll fix it while you wait. Again, 877-772-8880. Bud Light Seltzer.
Mango.
Strawberry.
I want to see
black it. Cherry, lemon lime.
Send me pictures.
Or mango.
All of it. Send me pictures.
Hashtag cool zone.
Let's go.
Where's your chill zone?
Where are you chilling this weekend?
Where you at?
You bust your ass all fucking week. I want you guys chilling. Kick your feet up. Hang out with the wife. Show me what you got going. I need your safe, happy, cool place.
Show me what you're working with.
Mango.
Show me what you're working with. Get that variety pack, too, with cranberry and grapefruit and pineapple, in addition to their great original flavor, strawberry, black cherry, lemon lime, and mango.
Working the mill in Canada. All you Canadians working at the fucking mill, doing your shit. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
I see you. Chill out, baby. Chill on the lake. Chill on your trailer. I don't give a shit. Have your chill zone. I love it.
Where's your chill zone? We want to know. So check that out.
Bud Light Seltzer. Pond.
BudLight.com, they will deliver it to you. You want to order it online, you can do that. And listen, man, it's healthy, not going to leave you bloated, less than a gram of sugar, 100 calories, and 5% alcohol.
Oh,
so you can have some fun with that, too, with Bud Light Seltzer. So check that out. Bud Light Seltzer, unquestionably good. How about Bellman and Bellman.com?
Class, baby.
You're looking for the new
Buick
Enclave.
Your grandmother could walk in.
You want to get a Buick Enclave? Maybe a Dodge?
Yeah.
You have to cross the street to look at both of those.
Easy.
You got the Cadillac Buick GMC on one side of the street, the Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on the other side. Danny Bellman, one of the best you're ever going to find.
Fucking man.
The leader in the St. Louis area
and
throughout the Midwest, honestly, when it comes to selling cars. And they've been doing it for a long time. Big supporters of hockey. Support our sponsors, man. Support Danny Bellman, please.
That keeps us rolling. Like, guys, you got to understand. That keeps us going, man. You got to take care of the sponsors. Sometimes you can't because you're in Canada and things like that, and that's fine. But there's a lot of St. Louis guys here. Go check them out. You can send your wife there. You can send your fucking grandmother there. They'll take care of her.
Absolutely.
And they'll hook her up, too. Because they feel good about hooking people up.
Send your sister.
They don't feel good about ripping people off like most of these sons of bitches do. We see it.
Send your sister there. You can send whoever. Your neighbor. Whoever you want.
You got a
man.
Sister?
I do have a
What's
sister.
What's she look like? I mean, where's she live?
D.C.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's for the best.
All right, Bellman.com. Check it out. HockeyTraining.com. Listen, I committed myself, man, to take this stuff serious with HockeyTraining.com.
Well, you should, because I'm starting to invite you back every time.
And the speed kit.
You skated away from Chaser pretty fast the other day, and I could tell you've been working on it.
That was the fastest I'd ever skated.
Oh, my God. You fucking three-stepped that motherfucker. Woo, doggy.
I had to get away.
Because he's going to two-hand you in the back of the leg.
I was waiting for it.
Holy shit.
But again, if you're a men's league player, don't show up to the rink without doing what you need to do between games.
Don't waste my time.
Make sure you're working out. Don't be going to a gym training like
Why am I busting my ass
and you're
not?
Trying to like go to the beach to wheel when you have no chance.
What are we doing here?
Train to be a better hockey player.
So you think you're just going to jump on every team because like you're buddies with people? Like if you suck, you suck, dude. Like guys, you're going to ruin relationships if you're that bad at hockey. No, I'm dead serious on that. Yes. If you come in the locker room and you fucking suck and you're not even like everybody else is kind of like stick handling and shit and you don't and you're the worst player, like you could be a great guy. Guys fucking hate you.
Yeah.
Like it's the way it goes. You're not going to be a part of the hockey club. And that's what you want to be a part of.
Yes.
Get the fuck to work.
Girls, boys, men,
girls, boys,
women,
little kids,
anybody,
matter.
Man. Yeah. Get involved with HockeyTrainer.com. Do the hockey yoga. Get the hockey videos and get stronger.
So easy.
Get in shape.
So easy.
And it is easy.
Yep.
And again, a small fee. Become a VIP member of HockeyTraining.com. Our boys Dan and Kevin flat out getting it done. Do great videos too, man. Love the videos that they have right now that are out on HockeyTraining.com. And of course, Victor Hockey and VictorHockey.com. We've got the hats on right now. They've got the hoodies. They've got the shirts right out of Denver, Colorado. And they got this sick logo.
I love it.
They got a couple different logos. You got the palm tree. We got the pine tree, too. We got to get our boy Jamie here a hat. If you're listening, we got to get our producer a hat. Send some more hats for our producer. And Gretzky. Okay? We got to get Gretzky some hats. He loved the logo. He's like, what is that? Where's that from?
Janet 101, too.
Yeah. Well, we'll hook her up, too.
Yeah. Damn right. The whole Gretzky family.
All of
one.
Them. Dustin Johnson. We'll get him
I
one,
know
too.
He does.
Okay.
Text me today.
Victor Hockey. Check him out on Instagram, also on Twitter, at VictorHockeyUSA.com. So check that out. Neil Smith, man, what
fucking
a treat.
A.
We appreciate him coming on with us. Check out our Twitter. Check out our Instagram as well.
Facebook, all
at
of it.
Cam and Strick Pod. We've got some great content coming up, including this one. Hope you enjoyed Neil Smith on the Cam and Strick Podcast.